tries to sabotage successful talks between the US and Ukraine by claiming that the Ukrainians targeted President Putin's home, and...
There was a lot riding on this fight, a lot of pressure, a lot of expectations, so I had to perform.
Last week he knocked out Logan Paul, and now narrowly escapes death after a horror crash in Nigeria. We'll bring you the latest.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Idris Elba has been knighted and England women's football coach Serena Wiegmann is made an honorary dame in the New Year's honours list. Actor Warwick Davis and co-host of Global's podcast The Sports Agents, Gabby Logan, both receive an OBE. D-Day veteran Mervyn Kirsch, who's 101, has been awarded a British Empire Medal for his wartime service. Mr Kirsch spoke to LBC at the Remembrance Day commemorations last month.
We've learned nothing, I say we, governments, successive governments, because as I say, the most important thing is to be so strong that should come before anything else. The main thing is to have strong defence than anyone else. I know it's a race and waste of money, but it saves our liberty, it saves having wars.
Anthony Joshua's promoter has confirmed two of his close friends and team members were killed in yesterday's crash in Nigeria. The two-time world heavyweight champion was injured when the jeep they were travelling in hit a stationary truck. Sinagami and Latif Ayodele were also in the vehicle when it crashed near to Lagos. The Cabinet Office insists documents referring to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor withheld from the National Archives were never intended for release. Anti-monarchy campaign group Republic have accused the government of covering up for the royal family. Andrew has always denied wrongdoing. An urgent review will be carried out into serious information failures in the case of British Egyptian activist Ala Abdel Fattah. It's after historical tweets emerged where he appeared to call for violence against Zionists and the police. He has since apologised. But Rabbi Levi Shapiro, founder of the Jewish Community Council, told LBC his British citizenship should be taken away.
Every single minute this man is still in the country, that puts our lives more at risk. Generally speaking, across the country, he despises everything we stand for as British people. There is nothing he believes in British values. What brings this person here to the UK? Nobody can answer that.
And Plymouth, Stafford and Wigan have been identified as the housing hotspots of 2025. They all saw house values rise by more than 10% this year. London was the only region where prices fell slightly. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Okay, time for a proper breather. This new year, get 15% off when you book two consecutive nights or more at Premier Inn. Visit the family, then escape them. Back to a luxury bed instead of your auntie's sofa. Or head off on a city break that feels like a real break with checkout at midday. Start the new year with Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Book by 12th of Jan for stays between 29th of Jan and 30th of April. Standard rate rooms, UK only. Exclude Central London. Terms apply. See premierinn.com.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good morning. 3 minutes past seven is the time. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. Coming up...
A woman and her two children have died in a fire on Boxing Day near Stroud in Gloucestershire. I'm Thea Rickard with the details.
Thea will bring us the latest. Plus, figures from the Lib Dems suggest 8 in 10 hospitals are now using outdated medical equipment. If you work in a hospital, is that your experience? We'll have the honours list.
Was it all worth it? We've learned nothing. I say we, governments, successive governments. Because as I say, the most important thing is to be so strong that should come before anything else.
That's 101-year-old Mervyn Kirsch speaking with me last month. I was actually at his 100th birthday, would you believe, which was a real privilege. He's been awarded a British Empire Medal as Idris Elba gets a knighthood. And this man...
In towards Gerrard!
A An OBE for the legendary commentator Clive Tyldesley. He joins us later on. The survey that says one in three people now think Britishness is dependent on being born in the UK. And Beyoncé has become the fifth musician to become a billionaire. She joins her husband, Jay-Z.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Good morning to you. 5 minutes past seven is the time. Henry Riley here on LBC. We're going to start the show with a story that is still on the front pages of many of the newspapers. The extremist, as he is described in the Daily Mail, still welcome in the UK after comments from a Downing Street spokesperson yesterday. Now, this is something which we discussed on the programme yesterday before those comments with a variety of politicians. I spoke at one point in the show with Chris Philp, the Conservative Shadow Home Secretary.
He expressed racist, anti-white views. He described white people as dogs. He said he hated white people. He's expressed anti-Semitic views, calling for Jewish civilians to be murdered. He's called for Downing Street to be burned down. And he called for the British police to be attacked. This man is a scumbag. He has no place in the UK. And if I were Home Secretary, I would today be revoking his British citizenship.
But as I pointed out to Mr. Philp, of course, it was under a Conservative government back in 2021 with which he was given citizenship. This is the British-Egyptian activist Ala Abd El Fattah and the decision to welcome him to the UK. Keir Starmer, I think with hindsight, a pretty unfortunate post on social media where he made a bit of a deal of it, saying he was delighted that El Fattah had arrived in the UK and that it was a priority for his government. Important to say it was a priority for the previous government as well, even people such as Liz Truss and other Conservatives were involved in the campaign to try and get Mr. El Fattah to return to the UK after he was in prison in Cairo. I also spoke with the SNP MP, Stephen Gethins, who told me...
Wait a minute, how can you revoke somebody's citizenship? Can you revoke my citizenship? Let's a bit of nuance here, if I may. There was a campaign to have somebody released who'd been put in jail by the Egyptian authorities for pro-democracy social media posts. Now, if a UK citizen, he is a UK citizen, and we can't be stripped of that right, has broken the law, done something, and incidentally, I think it's right he's apologised, and those tweets were outrageous. They weren't right. However, the full force of the law should be applied in the same way as it applies to me or to you, Henry, or to any of your listeners.
Stephen Gethins, to remind you, we won't go through all of those messages again because we did it sort of ad nauseum yesterday. But I mean, these messages dating back to 2010, where he called for the killing of all Zionists, including civilians. He described the British as dogs and monkeys, spoke of his hatred for white people and Germans, boasting he was proud of being racist against whites. He was dropped from a Peace Prize in 2014. 2014, by the way, 7 years before he was given citizenship because he spoke about killing Israelis. So he was dropped for that. And he said the police were not human, saying we should just kill them all. And this was the man that Keir Starmer said he was delighted to welcome to the UK. Also speaking on LBC yesterday was the chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, the Labour MP, Emily Thornberry.
People around the world, presidents and prime ministers, you know, were all campaigning for this. And then he was given British citizenship. And so we had particular responsibility for him. The Conservatives campaigned for him to be released as much as we did. And finally, he was released.
Emily Thornberry speaking with Ian Dale, and he did apologise, Abd El Fattah. It's being labelled as a partial apology in the Daily Mail. He said that he recognised how shocking and hurtful his past comments were, saying they were expressions of a young man's anger and frustration at a time of regional crises, i.e. what is happening in Iraq, Lebanon and Gaza, and the rise of police brutality against Egyptian youth. Now, Yvette Cooper, the Foreign Secretary, I was going to say Home Secretary, her previous role, the Foreign Secretary, has ordered an inquiry and has asked the top Mandarin at the Home Office to find out why she was unaware and why the government was unaware, seemingly, of these social media posts. I'd like to know from you this morning, though, whilst what this man has said is utterly deplorable, and he seems like a complete lowlife, to be completely honest, noting that he was in prison on what seemed to be trumped-up charges in Cairo, does not excuse some of the vile bile that he put on social media. And he's, I mean, quite frankly, he doesn't seem like a particularly nice person to deal with. However, Having said that, is it not a dangerous path to go down if we pick and choose who remains a citizen? It sort of comes back to the Shamima Begum case. You'll remember the so-called ISIS bride. But would you be comfortable, as Chris Philp suggests, as Reform suggests, by revoking this individual's citizenship? Or should he not be judged here in the UK, given he is a citizen, and that is the sort of law with which we have ended up? Should he not be judged here because of what he has previously said, rather than revoking his citizenship? Or do you frankly say, to be honest, I couldn't care less? 0345 6060973, the number to call. I mentioned Shamima Begum. Let's speak first with Andrew Drury, the journalist and filmmaker who interviewed Shamima Begum. Of course, her citizenship was revoked. Andrew Drury joins me now. Do you recognise any parallels between that case and this case, Andrew? Good morning.
Slightly, but not a lot. I mean, both had dual citizenship, although she was born here. And he wasn't. So I think that's the biggest difference with the argument about this. I don't believe that she should come back, and I believe that he should be deported. I think that's the only same thing about both cases, really, is they both shouldn't be here.
The curious case with Shamima Begum, though, was that she and the Bangladesh government were claiming that she'd never been to Bangladesh and that she didn't have that citizenship, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, but they said she hasn't, but she did have dual citizenship. She did. She had the rights from parents, so she was entitled to go back to Bangladesh. I think her parents have said that, but she told me herself that she would rather have died than gone to Bangladesh anyway. She said that she'd have been executed as soon as she went there. He wouldn't. I don't even understand why we're debating the fact is whether he stays or not. He should be gone deported immediately anyway.
Why do you think that, Andrew?
Well, his citizenship was given to him on wrong premises, because it was in 2021 and these tweets were already out there. I think he should already been gone. I think we should go back and say he shouldn't have been ever given to him anyway, and removed and take away and got rid of him. I don't even know why we need to debate it. He should be gone straight away.
Would you worry about a precedent it sets? Should there be a mechanism, or do you think it is fine for the Home Secretary of the day, or the Prime Minister of the day, or whomever, to make that decision? Do you worry it could go down the sort of slippery slope argument, Andrew?
Well, I question myself about the Shamima thing as well, because what makes you British? She was born in Bethnal Green. She was as British as anybody else, but she didn't hold the values. I still find that uncomfortable now, because her birthright. I mean, as many times as I've seen her, I've spoken to her recently, I still think that's a problem about her being born in the UK. This guy wasn't. This guy should have, you have to earn your right if you come from another country, and we give you that citizenship. And obviously, I don't think he has that right to be here. Where Shamima's always going to be a difficult case because of where she was born.
Do you give any truck to his apology, saying that there was a febrile time of regional crises in the Middle East, for example, and that he understood how shocking they were and he apologises?
No, I don't. I don't accept any of that. I don't accept his apology either. I think he's just been caught out, and of course he'd say that because he wants the safety of this country, because he's been locked up in his birthplace of Egypt. Tough luck, send him back. If he doesn't hold our values, we shouldn't have him here.
Thank you, Andrew. As always, much appreciated. Andrew Drury is a journalist and filmmaker who interviewed Shamima Begum. Of course, her citizenship was revoked. Shailesh Mehta is criminal and human rights barrister and joins me on the line now. Do you agree with Mr. Drury, Shailesh? Morning.
Good morning. Mr. Drury will forgive me for saying that, thank goodness, that even though I disagree with him, that I don't have the powers that he wants the Home Secretary to effectively deport anyone who he claims not to have British values, because it's such a vague term that any Home Secretary can then say that Mr. Drury doesn't have British values, or that any political leader in the opposition doesn't have such values. Thank goodness we have a law that is based firstly on fairly wide words. Section 40 of the British Nationality Act gives the Home Secretary, on the face of it, fairly wide powers to deprive citizenship based upon whether someone's presence is conducive to the public good. Now, those words, even though they seem wide, conducive to the public good, have been, as you'd expect, reviewed fairly narrowly by the courts, because otherwise a Home Secretary would have almost unfettered powers to get rid of someone that people like Mr. Drury don't like. And so the courts have said that really what you've got to look at is whether the deprivation power was designed for national security, serious terrorism, espionage, those sorts of serious areas. And the courts have concluded, and guidance from the Home Office have concluded, that yes, those are the sorts of actions that could deprive a person of citizenship.
But is that an open and shut case, or is there, do you think that could be further interpreted? Because, I mean, for instance, I mean, David says from Maidenhead that his tweets could be interpreted as racial hatred, where he's talking about hating white people, for example, or killing Zionists.
Yes, the courts have been quite careful not to tie in the Home Secretary's powers to a list of things that one can and can't do. But the courts have been fairly clear that ordinarily it's actions that matter, and that generally the areas one concerns with is national security, serious terrorism, espionage, and things of that sort. Ordinarily offensive or even potentially criminal speech generally can be dealt with by the criminal law process in this country rather than banishment.
We're focusing on the recent welcoming of him. If I take you back to 2021 when he was given citizenship, the then Conservative government, and I had Chris Philp on the show yesterday, you might have heard a little bit of it, but he was saying that that was not their fault, and effectively it was the fault of civil service mandarins, and it wasn't a sort of political decision. Is there any truck in that argument?
One's got to look behind that. One doesn't really know, but it's surprising that in a high-profile case of this sort, where successive British governments have supported the freeing of this man, that such basic checks were not done. So I'd find it very surprising. But even if they had been done, really the key question is, are the views expressed 10 years ago worthy of a person's citizenship being taken away? And of course, one only has to look at some of the things that politicians have said, some in their youth, some recently. For example, would going to America and saying to the president of America how awful the UK is and not arguing against tariffs against the UK. Some politicians might say that's actually almost treasonous, and therefore that person's citizenship should be deprived. Or the fact that when they were a child at school, they sang allegedly Nazi songs. Now, some people would say that should deprive a politician of their citizenship. But of course, thank goodness we don't live in a state like that.
Thank you very much for your time. Of course, referring to Nigel Farage there, something he denies. Shailesh Mehta is criminal and human rights barrister. Over to you now. I mean, we obviously spoke about this yesterday, but I wonder if in the sort of 24 hours, 23 hours since, you've had a change of view. Do you accept that argument from the barrister with which we heard just then, that it is a bit of a slippery slope? And thank goodness we don't have a situation where the Home Secretary can decide who has citizenship and who doesn't. I'm slightly uncomfortable with that, noting that I think this man is a complete lowlife. To remind you of what else he said, go burn the city or burn Downing Street or hunt police, you fools. And also said, by the way, I'm a racist. I don't like white people, so pee off. And this is a man, as I continue on saying, but I will say it, Keir Starmer said he was delighted to have in the UK, noting he didn't know what those social media posts were. I wonder if you think he should be revoked of his citizenship. 0345 6060 973 plus.
There was a lot riding on this fight, a lot of pressure, a lot of expectations, so I had to perform.
In the news last week for fighting Logan Paul, Anthony Joshua now escapes death by inches in a car crash that was fatal for some passengers. The latest on that, 7:17 the time, the news with Amelia Cox.
Torvald and Dean, Idris Elba and England's winning women's football and rugby teams have all been recognised in the New Year's honours list. Two members of Anthony Joshua's team were killed in a crash which also saw the boxer injured in Nigeria yesterday. And the Cabinet Office is being accused of a cover-up after withholding documents referring to Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor from the National Archives. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, the Liberty Line is currently suspended. The overnight works are still taking place and there are severe delays on the Elizabeth Line between Shenfield and Stratford. Southeastern trains aren't going to and from Victoria again today, and no Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services to and from Liverpool Street. The Weaver Line is also suspended to and from Liverpool Street, with trains starting and terminating at London Fields instead. On the roads in Bromley, Market Square is closed west bound from East Street to Church Road, and that's for emergency works. And in Highgate, Hornsey Lanes had to be closed in both directions at Thornbury Square, and that's following an accident.
This is LBC.
Turkey tummy.
Fizzy reflux. Sprouts.
Gastric trouble can feel like the festive gift that keeps on giving. At the first sign of discomfort, think Pepto-Bismol.
When you have nausea, heartburn,
Pepto-Bismol coats and soothes your stomach for effective five-symptom relief. Pepto-Bismol oral suspension contains bismuth subsalicylate. Always read the label.
This is my car.
Well, I saw it first.
I sat in it first.
You horrible man.
Ow!
At Harwoods, we think January sales should be civilised. That's why there's money off every new and approved used car until the 11th of January. Simply stroll to Harwoods Jaguar and Land Rover Crawley and Brighton, Harwoods Volvo Crawley or Harwoods Audi Five Oaks and Crawley. Details at harwoods.co.uk. The civilised January sale at Harwoods.
As you can hear from my voice, I'm in a state of high exhilaration. Yes, I am positively beside myself. The reason that I can barely contain my enthusiasm is the IKEA Winter Sale. Weeks of incredible bargains. The inexpressible thrill of finding precisely the right thing at the right price. Sale now on IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Rocky Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
21 minutes past seven is the time. We are talking about this. Well, again, we touched on it yesterday. We spoke about it yesterday. Abd el Fattah, Alaa Abd el Fattah, the British Egyptian activist who was in prison in Cairo. Welcome back to the UK. And it turns out is a pretty, well, he's got some pretty despicable views, if we're putting it mildly. The reason, by the way, a lot of people are saying why he's entitled to citizenship when he wasn't born in the UK is because of his mother. So the reason is the British Nationality Act of 1981. He was entitled to citizenship because his mother is a British national. She was born here while her mother was studying here, if that makes sense. But I wonder if that cuts it with you. Again, I say I'm slightly uncomfortable with us sort of picking and choosing who can be a British citizen. Noting these are pretty despicable remarks, I don't really know if I want to be in a situation where we're picking and choosing who gets citizenship and who doesn't because of social media. This is a high-profile case, but do you really want the government going through your old tweets and everything you've said in the past? I worry it is a bit of a slippery slope. Not noting, by the way, that I think, as I keep saying, he's got some despicable views. Front pages, The Guardian has a story which we are going to talk about a bit later on. One in three believe Britishness is dependent on being born in the UK. This is an exclusive poll saying the number of people who believe that it is something you are born with, has almost doubled in 2 years, according to research from the IPPR, the Institute for Public Policy Research. The Daily Mail, extremist is still welcome in UK, says Starmer, and they have a picture of Anthony Joshua on the front page. We'll be talking about that in more detail with a senior reporter at the Daily Mail in a moment. The Times, solar grants for millions to cut home energy use. Miliband vows to create zero-bill households. Millions of homeowners will be eligible for grants to install solar panels, heat pumps and battery storage in an attempt to create new zero-bill homes and win back voters to the idea of green energy. And there's a picture of Idris Elba on the front page of the Times. There is too on the LBC app where it says Idris Elba, Torval and Dean, Gabby Logan, who of course is a global colleague of ours, and the Lionesses lead the honours list. The Daily Express, fury as Starmer refuses to deport Egyptian extremist. The Eye paper again with the honours, pride of England, Lionesses lead New Year honours. The Sun, again, that story we're going to be touching on in a moment from Nigeria. AJ, just inches from death. He survives. Two pals killed. The Daily Star, boxer AJ in crash horror. The Daily Telegraph, Zionists out to get me, claims extremist. This again with regards to Alaa Abd El Fattah, who claims that he, there are claims that he liked a Facebook post which said that there was a campaign of Zionists against Alaa Abd El Fattah. It's not really helping his cause, is he? The Daily Mirror, Joshua Crash Horror. Again, this is, he was on holiday in Nigeria, helped from twisted wreckage after two friends die in hospital tragedy. And the Financial Times, US stocks eclipsed by rest of the world as Trump policies and tech fears take toll. I do need to clarify something. I think I said earlier on it was Logan Paul. I've been informed that there's someone called Jake Paul, and that's who he was fighting, Anthony Joshua. So I beg your pardon, and thank you to a couple of people who pointed it out, that it was Jake Paul that he was fighting, not Logan Paul, Anthony Joshua, last week. Seamus is in Wellington. Hi, Seamus.
Good morning, Henry.
Morning,
sir. If I could make two quick points. Mm-hmm. Firstly, if Lucy Connolly had threatened to burn down Downing Street, kill white people and Jews, perhaps she'd be on the honours list now, awaiting recognition from Labour. The second point I'd like to make is that
contentious, Seamus, but go on.
Well, it's reinforcing the fact that we do have a two-tier approach to justice in this country. And under a Labour government, extremists are welcome in this country and our own people are put at risk. And if you recall what Keir Starmer said after the appalling attack on the mosque in Heaton in Manchester, that he would do everything he could to protect the Jewish people in this country. How does that resonate this morning with him welcoming Islamic terrorists to our shores, who want to kill Zionists hate white people?
He has expressed those sentiments. You must also be frustrated with the Conservative government who granted him citizenship, Seamus.
I'm more disappointed. Well, it's indicative of the fact that we cannot trust our politicians. There's a whole political class and the legal class that think they know better and that ordinary people are not entitled to safety and or an opinion. And the sooner, your barrister on earlier was patronising beyond anything. He does not have the best interests of people in this country.
Well, let's not attack him. He's not here to defend himself. Hello?
Well, that's how I feel, Henry, and that's how a lot of ordinary people feel, fed up.
You mentioned Lucy Connolly, though, Seamus. I mean, if we are talking about vile tweets, then she does also fit into that category, though. You accept that?
Well, what she tweeted was incredibly stupid and offensive, and by God did she need her backside kicked. But how long was she in jail? Was that proportionate? Is this guy going to be jailed? Is he going to be held to account?
Well, I don't know. He's been reported to counter-terrorism police by Nigel Farage, but there's no sense that he's under investigation at the moment, as far as I'm concerned. Thank you very much, Seamus. Always nice to hear from you and the frank views from Wellington. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. We'll come back to your views on that in just a moment. First, though, when I was going through the front pages of the newspapers, Anthony Joshua, the boxer, narrowly escaped death after a car he was travelling in was involved in a fatal crash in Nigeria. Nick Pisa is senior reporter at the Daily Mail and joins me now with the very latest. We know that two close friends of his have died, Nick. Do we know any more details as to who they are? Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you, honey. Yes, we do. They're two of his very best friends, actually. He's been with them for years. They're trainers with him. And they were named by authorities overnight as Sai Nagami and Latif Kevin Ayodole, both British nationals. In fact, Sina owns a gym in the Harrow area of London called Evolve, which have put out a statement overnight on social media saying that they are going to be closed today as they mourn the passing of their owner, Mr. Sai Nagami. I can also tell you that overnight British officials, the Deputy High Commissioner in Nigeria, Simon Field, visited Anthony Joshua in hospital. And the latest bulletin we have is that he is stable and conscious and he's spoken to family and friends. And we know that the President of Nigeria has also spoken with him and he in turn has spoken with Anthony Joshua's mother. But I think, as you said in your introduction there, Henry, if you just look at the pictures, you just realise how lucky Anthony Joshua was. I mean, it's obviously, sadly, tragically, two of his best friends had been killed. But he was sat behind the driver, who also survived. The passenger in the front was killed, and the guy sitting next to Anthony Joshua was also killed. We're told that it was possibly high speed, or very likely high speed, tyre blowout as well. And as the driver tried to regain control, the Lexus that he was travelling in crashed into the back of a stationary truck that was parked on the side of the highway, on the hard shoulder.
And remarkable that, as you say, clearly in a lot of pain based on the videos that have surfaced, but he did manage to walk out.
That's right, yeah. When I spoke to the governor, or the information officer, sorry, from Ogun State yesterday, which is where the accident happened, it's about... So to give some context, Anthony Joshua was travelling from Lagos. He literally only arrived on Monday morning with his entourage. Monday morning with his entourage, and was then travelling towards Sagumu, which is a village, a town about an hour or so away from Lagos to the northeast. And that's where he has family and where he visits every now and then. And yes, this accident took place on that highway. And you can see from the pictures the wreckage of the car, and he does stumble out. He walks, you can see from the pictures, walks on his own legs. That's how it was quoted to me by the governor of Ogun as well. But he does appear to be in pain. He's grimacing a lot. And I know they're saying he's in a stable condition, but you could tell from the expression on his face that he did look to be in pain. And you have to wonder now whether the fights that were scheduled for possibly February this next year and late September will take place.
Thank you very much, as always. Nick Pisa with the very latest, senior reporter at the Daily Mail. On the subject of Abdel El Fattah, this from Glyn says, I think we need to look at how the government have jumped up and down about alleged comments of Nigel Farage as a teenager, but faced with the physical evidence of tweets by Ala Abdel Fattah, he's guilty as charged. And then we have the apology angle. I'm sure Lucy Connolly said she was sorry. Revoke his citizenship while the ink is still drying, says Glyn. Rupert says, now RE, this dual nationality horror individual, deport ASAP, end of. There are at least two daily Egyptian air flights from London Heathrow to Cairo. One-way ticket there, please. And Paul says he should be deported. If Starmer didn't know, then he is incompetent. If he did, he's complicit in importing haters. Bring on US-style ICE, which I don't know if necessarily if that's what we want in the UK. But more of your views on that in a moment. 0345 6060 973. Is it time, as the Tories, as Reform suggest, to revoke his citizenship? Your views next. Also...
This is not just food, this is M&S food.
Well, now it's going to get more nutritious and smaller if you're on the weight loss jabs. M&S have announced a new range, and in business... The singer Beyoncé has become the fifth singer, performer, to become a billionaire. But who else is on the list? We'll tell you more in a moment. 7:31 is the time. The news headlines are with Amelia Cox.
England's winning women's football and rugby teams are among those named in the New Year's Honours list. Lionesses manager Serena Wiegmann has also been awarded an honorary damehood, while Idris Elba has been knighted. Two of Anthony Joshua's close friends and team were killed in a crash in Nigeria, which left the boxer injured. Sinagami and Latif Ayodele were killed when the vehicle they were travelling in hit a stationary truck. And official papers about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor have been withheld from the National Archives. The Cabinet Office says files about his travel plans were never meant for release. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
I'm Andrew Marr. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC.
You could say to the British people on Budget Day, look, things are really bad, therefore I have to raise income tax. So tomorrow I'm going to resign as Chancellor of the Exchequer, having done the right thing.
And what do you think would happen in financial markets if I did that?
It depends who took over.
President Trump seems to be waking up every morning with a new idea, and be it tariffs or something else. In my personal opinion, I don't think he's thought it through.
What's your verdict so far on how it's going?
Despair of the risk-free, be all things to all men approach of Keir Starmer, which I think is a fool's errand.
I'll be back in the new year leading Britain's conversation.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the content production industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Daisy, a technical content production student in year 12.
We've already learned how to create content and work with employers in the media industry. I love working in the studio, making my own podcast, and can't wait to start my 45-day work placement next term.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Fonterra Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders ends 12th of January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Our pets in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like The X-Files.
I'm Christiane Amanpour and I've been on the front lines and interviewing world leaders for more than 30 years.
And I'm Jamie Rubin, a former advisor to both Presidents Clinton and Biden.
We were married for 20 years.
And divorced for 7.
Now we've joined forces on The X-Files to make sense of how we ended up with no world order.
Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files. Listen for free on Global Player.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Text 84850.
7:35 is the time. Good morning. Henry Reilly here on LBC. David in Balham, coming to you in just a second on the Alaa Abdel Fattah story and whether he should lose his British citizenship. First, let's check in with business. Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. Kathleen, Merry Christmas. Thank you for joining us. Can I ask you first, the Chancellor has been accused of turning a blind eye to the damage caused by the doom loop of speculation over a pensions tax raid. Can you put that in English for us?
Yes, Merry Christmas, Merry Henry. Christmas. So in the lead up to the last two budgets, we've had a lot of speculation, as we can all remember, about what is going to be taxed. And I think there's an expectation now that this is a tax-heavy government. So with probably about 11 months to go before the budget, the speculation has started already. So this time is about pensions. So it's essentially the Chancellor has refused to rule out taxing pensions. So essentially taxing the amount that you can, allowing you to take out money. Right now, you can take out money from your pension without being taxed. There is an expectation that as the Chancellor tries to broaden the tax base, that she's going to start taxing us for doing that. Now, some campaigners have actually asked her to put out a specific pensions tax lock in recent weeks. Now, she has refused to do that. So there is expectation that there will be a limit, potentially fairly small limit, for some people at around, you know, less than £50,000, where if you take more than that out of your pension, then you will be taxed. And that is causing already speculation, fears, people making rash decisions with their pensions. Now, we saw in the last couple of years that people have been taking money out of their pension pots prematurely to avoid this tax. So take it out before the tax comes into place, really. But that essentially means that in your retirement, you might not have as much money as you expect. And it could actually deplete people's pension funds, which essentially makes people poorer. So it's really a bit more of this economic mismanagement from the Chancellor, and the fact that she loves to speak about the budget months and months and months in advance, which just causes more confusion and more worry for everyone.
If we go to the food stalls, Kathleen, it's not just any nutrient-dense food. It's Marks and Spencer's nutrient-dense food. Why are they doing this?
Yeah, well, it's all about the Ozempic users. So GLP-1 drugs that are making lots of people in the UK lose weight. They are seeing a new market. Now, you'd think that people eating less would be bad news for supermarkets. But M&S and others, including Morrisons and even Nestle, they're launching new ranges of nutrient-dense foods. Now, this is because when you eat less, you essentially get fewer nutrients. So it's about meeting people's nutritional needs through ready meals. So M&S have developed a range by nutritionists to essentially deliver more nutrients per mouthful. Now, this includes dishes like satay chicken, katsu curry, a prawn paella, and you could round it all up if you've got the appetite with a cocoa chia mousse, which all sound quite delicious, really. But they're, as I mentioned, they're not the only ones that have done it. Morrison's have done it. There's also, you know, multivitamin makers. They're making specific vitamins for GLP-1s. And, you know, it's a big market, Henry, because 1.5 million people, now they're getting these drugs through private pharmacies in the UK. That doesn't even include the people on the NHS getting it as well. So there's a huge market for this. And I guess it's just a way to maybe counterbalance the effects of people buying less in the supermarkets.
And coming in from the 5th of January, no restaurants are doing the same, actually. A lot of restaurants are sort of making their portion sizes smaller because of this. Lastly, Kathleen. Yes, Beyoncé has become the 5th musician to become a billionaire. I'll put people out of their misery firstly. She joins her husband, Jay-Z, who has an estimated worth of up to £1.92 billion. Taylor Swift, Bruce Springsteen and Rihanna also in there. But this is quite the achievement for Beyoncé.
Oh, it really is. Long I mean, overdue. It's massive. And long overdue, I would completely agree. And she really works for that money as well, because she's a bit like Taylor Swift. She's getting the bulk of her money through her tours. So her 2023 Renaissance tour grossed $600 million. I actually went to that one. And then her most recent one, the Cowboy Carter album, she toured with that as well in 2025. Now that grossed $400 million, so a little bit less. But she did manage to get $50 million in merchandise sales as well. She definitely is working for it, because the touring is really tough, and she does put on a brilliant show. I went to both of those tours, and I have to say they were absolutely worth it. You get some decent priced tickets as well, especially for the last one. But this also means, Henry, that we've got more female than male musicians on the billionaire list. So, I think probably the last couple of years, women, performers have really dominated the tours and dominated the stadium tours. And that's really showing in this list.
Kathleen Brooks is a Beyoncé fan, a financial analyst and the research director at the trading platform XTB. Back to Alaa Abdel Fattah, the subject with which we started, the British Egyptian. David's in Balham. Hello, David.
Well, hi, good morning, Henry.
Morning.
Henry, I'm a black man. I'm also a former rifleman with the Royal Green Jackets. Oh. And I can't understand what all the fuss is about. This chap, this Abdel Al-Fattah, all he's done is make some really disgusting, filthy comments. That's all he's done. If he was stockpiling weapons or meeting in secret groups to ambush white men, then yeah, go and get him.
David, if you're listening to what he has said and you are a Jewish person living in the UK and he's saying he wants to kill Zionists, I mean, you can understand why people feel threatened by that.
I was raised in Tottenham, Stamford Hill, in the heart of a Jewish community, and I have said very similar comments as to what he said, but I don't mean any of it. I don't mean any of it. It's just
It's hardly a joke, David, talking about killing all Zionists.
Well, I tell you what, Henry, when I sit down as a former rifleman and I hear politicians saying that they're mad, they get mad when they see black people on TV, how do you think that makes me feel? I don't quite say that anymore.
We're not trading insults. There's not a sort of hierarchy of this, is there? Both are disgusting.
You're starting to get it. Yeah, I don't hate white men. I've spent most of my youth in the army with white men. Yeah. I don't hate
police. David, in this specific case, he is talking and clearly directing his ire and anger and racism at Jewish people.
It's just freedom of speech. He's frustrated.
It's not freedom of speech, David, to say that you want to kill all Zionists. No, it's not.
If he had weapons, if he was stockpiling weapons and we had intelligence that he was meeting in groups and gangs and organisations...
David, do you really want to live in a society where people are able... Well, no, not really, if you're going to come out with nonsense. Where people are able to say they want to kill a certain group of people. Seriously.
Yes, I get it all the time. Just to deal with Fogarty, they're talking about cutting votes.
But I'm saying, do you want to live in a society where that is the case?
It's freedom of speech.
It's not freedom of speech to say that you want to kill a certain group of people, David.
I'm afraid it will...
What do you think he meant when he said he wanted to burn down Downing Street? Was he just having a laugh? He's hilarious.
He didn't mean it. He was just frustrated.
He was frustrated. What about when he was talking about the Holocaust?
You really think he's planning to burn down Downing Street? Policemen and kill policemen? What's wrong with you?
Why would he say it, David?
It's just frustrating. What going on in the world. Like, I am
frustrated about what's going on in the world, and I don't say I want to kill police officers or Zionists, David.
I'm a former British Army soldier.
You've said that three times, and I'm grateful for your service, but you can't use that as a cover the whole time, I'm afraid, David.
I've been the rising racism in Britain, and it's making me stay and think very dangerous things.
And I'm sorry to hear that, David, but I'm afraid it doesn't justify it.
Well, that's where we are, Henry.
Right, okay.
You know, if you checked my tweets, you'll find dodgy things on my tweets. But I don't mean any of it.
Well, that doesn't mean we just let people get away with it then, does it, David? Thank you. More calls in a moment. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. We'll come back to you using that in just a moment. First, though, a horrific and tragic story that's been featured in all of the newspapers today. A policeman fought in vain to save wife and two children as Boxing Day blaze tore through home. This was in Gloucestershire, in Brimscombe Hill, near Stroud. LBC's reporter Thea Rickard joins me on the line now with the very latest. Thea.
Well, Henry, across the country, we slept off the chaos of Christmas Day, with presents still for children to play with and wrapping paper left discarded. When at around 3 a.m. on Boxing Day, emergency services were called to a stone cottage on Brimscombe Hill near Stroud in Gloucestershire, where we're told a woman in her late 30s and her two children, aged 4 and 7, died in a fire. Gloucestershire police tell us the woman's husband and the children's father are serving police officer tried to rescue his family but was beaten back by the severity of the flames. They say he actually smashed his way out of the house through a bathroom window to try and save the children through their outside bedroom window but was unable to do so. Now we're told investigations are ongoing to figure out how that fire started, but it's not being treated as suspicious. Officers tell us the surviving family member is understandably distraught, and a fundraiser for him has already reached almost £130,000.
Thank you very much for your time. Thea Rickard is LBC's reporter on that tragic story. We'll come back to your calls on Ala Abdel Fattah and whether he should have his citizenship revoked, or whether, like David says, you can basically just tweet what you want. You can tweet about killing whoever you want because it's only a joke and we've all tweeted that. Well, I can tell you one thing. I certainly haven't, and I doubt you have either. More calls in a moment. Also,
we all know that we've reached a crisis point across the NHS and care sectors, with more patients than ever waiting for treatment.
8 in 10 hospitals are using hundreds of outdated machines, such as X-rays and MRI scanners. Remember, there are also fax machines in the NHS and in hospitals as well. As the Lib Dems warn that patients are being left at risk, we will speak with the Lib Dems in just a moment. 7:46 the time, the news with Amelia Cox.
Idris Elba, Torval and Dean, and co-host of Global's podcast, The Sports Agents, Gabby Logan, have all been named on the New Year's honours list. Anthony Joshua's promoter has confirmed the death of two of his close friends and team in a crash in Nigeria. And the Cabinet Office insists files referring to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, withheld from the National Archives, were never intended for release. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, the London Overground's Liberty Line is suspended because the overnight works are still taking place, and there are severe delays on the Elizabeth Line between Shenfield and Whitechapel. No Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services to and from Liverpool Street today, and so trains are going to Stratford instead. Also, the Weaver Line is suspended to and from Liverpool Street. Trains are going as far as London Fields. No southeastern trains to and from Victoria, so trains are going to Charing Cross, London Bridge or Cannon Street instead. On the roads in Bromley, Market Square is closed westbound for emergency works, but better news in Highgate, Hornsey Lane has just reopened in both directions.
This is LBC.
Get that Euro Millions feeling this Friday. 10 UK winners are guaranteed to be millionaires. That's 10 more reasons to celebrate. Not a bad way to start the new year. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Play on app. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
LBC.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet. Get out there.
Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Thinking about goals this time of year? Like saving money or buying a new car? Well, right now you can save £3,750 on the all-electric Mini Countryman with the electric car grant. Yep, two goals in one and you get more space, more adventure, more Mini than ever. I feel a cheeky little smile coming on. Start living the big life for less and save £3,750 with the electric car grant. Visit mini.co.uk/grant. Grant available for specifications up to £42,000. T's and C's apply.
Hiya, Kenny the hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey up, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself. Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10 to 8. Good morning to Sarah, who says, I'm so sick and tired of Henry. You could have just left it there, to be honest. Saying the Conservatives gave him citizenship. They did not. It was rubber stamped by civil servants. But I get that you want to deflect from Labour's woes. Bet you won't read this out. Well, the thing is, Sarah, I do take your point that it's civil servants. But if we're saying that the now Home Secretary, i.e. Labour, has the power to strip him of his citizenship, then given these tweets, some of which were made 11 years, I should say, before he was given citizenship, and given that he was stripped of a Peace Prize nomination for saying he wanted to kill Israelis 7 years before, the then Home Secretary could have intervened, Priti Patel. So it's all very well saying it was civil servants, but if we're calling for this government to intervene, given the tweets were out there before, then they could have intervened as well. But I'm very grateful for you messaging in nonetheless, Sarah, much appreciated. This from Jason says, these are, or were, given they were delivered more than 10 years ago, insults. Since when did insults warrant losing citizenship? Should Lucy Connolly be shipped to Ireland? Don't be daft, Henry. Well, I've said, I don't know how I can make my position clearer. I'm saying I feel uncomfortable with the idea that you can strip someone's citizenship purely because what they have said in a tweet. Having said that, I think this guy is clearly deplorable. I think his views are ridiculous and really should be investigated for saying he wanted to burn down Downing Street, that he hates white people, he wanted to kill police officers and Zionists. David's in South Woodford. Hello, David.
Morning, Henry.
Morning.
I just echo your point you've just made now. I think it's disgusting what he said, but I don't feel comfortable revoking someone's citizenship. How are we going to apply that objectively in the future to other cases? So he should be investigated, but not to revoke his citizenship. Second point I want to make, Henry, is the Tories want him sent back or whatever, but they have to look at their own MPs. In 2017, we had Priti Patel making illegal meetings with a foreign government in Israel without telling anyone, in breach of all protocol, and now she's been appointed as Shadow Home Secretary again.
Yeah. Foreign Secretary, so, Shadow Foreign Secretary, I think.
Shadow Foreign Secretary,
There is, that is obviously controversial, but I think calling for Zionists to be killed is rather different. I mean, could you imagine if you're listening to that and you are, for instance, a Jewish person living in the UK?
Mm. Yeah, it's pretty, as I said at the outset, it's pretty disgusting. But Priti Patel also illegally wanted to fund the IDF. So this really shows where interests lie, but the Tories don't look at their own MPs, who they then put in senior positions. So I think we just need to all calm down a bit. I don't think it's the right route to go down where you want to revoke people's citizenship at who makes the most noise about it.
Thank you, David, in South Woodford. Mumbashir is in Birmingham. Good morning.
Good morning. I don't think I can add any more than what everybody else has said. And
okay.
Echo your point, you know, that what's been said is it's not acceptable. But again, what precedent are we setting if we're revoking people's citizenship on what they're saying, despite what they're saying?
Should citizenship not be a privilege, though? and a privilege which some people are arguing he has scuppered his chance of achieving.
But then what precedent are we setting? I mean, what he said, I've seen a lot worse myself, and I'm sure others have that are listening in on social media, not just against one group of people, but all groups of people. So where does it end? You know, and I know that there's another David before this David that was talking. He was on about freedom of speech, and unfortunately, it is a right that we have. And if we look at what we say about, you know, Russia or China, and we say that they are, you know, dictatorships, and, you know, they won't let their citizens speak, and, you know, freedom is something that we're quite proud of, that we can openly speak, even though I don't agree with a lot of what people say, and it, you know, but it is what it is. You know, where does it end?
Thank you. Yeah, appreciated. Heard loud and clear. Mumbershire in Birmingham. More calls in a moment. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Let's change gear slightly. And in The Sun, the headline is Fear Over Old NHS Gear. 8 in 10 hospitals are relying on outdated medical equipment, raising fears about the risk to patients. There is one particular hospital in Plymouth that uses an 18-year-old MRI scanner. Well, how worrying is this? The data has been compiled by the Liberal Democrats, and their justice spokesperson and MP for Chichester, Jess Brown Fuller, joins me now. How concerned are you by this, Jess Brown Fuller, and what needs to be done? Because it's very easy to say, let's change all the equipment, but it's going to take a long time and not going to be cheap.
Yeah, so we're really concerned about this because NHS England guidance says that these machines, MRI machines, X-ray machines and radiotherapy machines should be replaced every 10 years. And yet data that we've collected from over 40 different hospital trusts is that some of them are using, like you said, X-ray machines that are 18 years old. There was a case in Shrewsbury and Telford. They had a 30-year-old X-ray machine, and this is damaging for everybody. It's damaging for the patients who are going into hospital and seeing that they have got really outdated equipment. It's also really damaging for staff because the morale is going to be really low in those departments where they see where they're not seeing the investment that they need. Technology is moving on very quickly, and if you're using outdated equipment, it is more likely to provide results that are less accurate than we can actually achieve. So since 2021, the repairs backlog has grown by 2.1 billion, and yet investment in the repairs backlog has dropped by 700 million. So we are not investing in the equipment that we need. It's a spend to save situation. If we replace the equipment, you're like less likely to have breakdowns. All of the equipment's going to be serviced a lot quicker, which means that patients will be seen quicker. And that should be the focus that the NHS have, is getting people off waiting lists.
Well, and the waiting lists have gone down under the Labour government. I mean, should that not be the focus? It's all very well saying that this equipment should be upgraded and updated, and then in cases where that's possible, then yes. But surely the current focus is working, the government would argue.
I think you can absolutely do both, and you can do both successfully. So there should be a focus to get waiting lists down, because those people across the country waiting on those waiting lists are utterly depressed and their lives are being put on hold. But you also need to make sure that you've got the equipment working when those patients finally get through the door for their appointment. You see it across the country where trusts are being asked to make efficiency savings. Now, they've made as many cuts as they can in terms of staffing. So now what they're doing is they are pushing the lifespan of their equipment beyond its actual lifespan, which means it is less efficient. So if they invest now, then it will continue to bring down the waiting list, which we do need to see.
Lastly, while I have you, Jess Brown Fuller, can I ask you if you think Ala Abdel Fattah should be stripped of his British citizenship? It's what we're discussing on LBC this hour.
So the social media comments that have come to light over recent days are appalling. And I imagine that the Jewish community especially have been really upset, especially after a rise in anti-Semitism over the last couple of years that we've seen in the UK. But there are two different things at play here. We can absolutely call out his comments. We can call them abhorrent, which is what they are. And I appreciate the fact that he's come forward and apologised. But a British citizen should not be stripped of their British citizenship for comments that were made online. Now he is in the UK, his comments should absolutely be investigated and go through UK legal process.
Okay. Thank you. Jess Brown Fuller is the Liberal Democrat Justice spokesperson. Dean's in Hammersmith. Do you agree with that, Dean? Morning.
Well, the thing I think is that this guy, he currently enjoys British citizenship. Yeah. And one of the benefits of that is that we get freedom of speech. Now, while I don't support his views, I do support freedom of speech. But why would this guy even given British citizenship in the first place?
Well, because of his mother.
His mother. And what was his mother?
Well, she was born in the UK.
So just because she was born there, that makes her British?
Under the 1981 Citizenship Act, yes, effectively. So you think that should be changed?
So I'm English, and my missus is English, yeah. And if we have a kid in Nigeria, is my kid now Nigerian?
Well, I think it depends on the country. Them's the rules in England. I don't know if it's the case in Nigeria, but you think that should be changed, do you, Dean?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. The indigenous population should be the only British citizens in this country.
Well, then you just look at, would Boris Johnson be English? I mean, he was born in New York, for example. You get into all sorts of different troubles. Thank you very much for your calls on that, Dean. We are going to come back to that subject, but we will move on. Coming up... Three say Britishness is dependent on being born in the UK, according to research. What does being British mean to you, also?
What I'm really interested in is that Labour do what they're supposed to do for workers and communities. They must be Labour. That's why they've been put into power.
More bad news for Keir Starmer. Sharon Graham, the head of Unite, says it's inevitable that Keir Starmer will be replaced as Labour leader, and...
If anyone has a chance of pushing Putin to do something, it's Trump. I think the question is, is Trump being played by Putin?
We'll discuss Ukraine with Volodymyr Zelensky accused of launching a drone attack on Vladimir Putin's residence, something that Ukraine deny.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Idris Elba, Torval and Dean and Gabby Logan, co-host of Global podcast The Sports Agents, are among the figures recognised in the New Year honours list. Sir Keir Starmer says it celebrates the very best of Britain. LBC's Helen Hodinott reports.
Figures from the arts world lead the King's New Year's honours. The actors Idris Elba and Mira Sayal are made a knight and dame. Gabby Logan, presenter of Global Sports Agents podcast, is also made an OBE alongside the author and broadcaster Richard Osman. Cynthia Erivo, star of the Wicked films, is made an MBE for services to music and drama. Roy Clark, creator of Last of the Summer Wine and Open All Hours, is made a knight. And legendary ice dancers Jane Torville and Christopher Dean have been awarded a damehood and a knighthood.
Two of Anthony Joshua's close friends and team members have been identified as two people killed in a crash which left the boxer injured. Sinagama and Latif Ayodele were travelling with the two-time world heavyweight champion in Nigeria yesterday. The Foreign Secretary has ordered an urgent review into the case of Alaa Abd El Fattah over the emergence of social media posts. The activist appeared to call for violence against Zionists and the police in a series of comments made online. He has since apologised, but there are calls for his British citizenship, which was granted in 2021, to be revoked. Criminal and human rights barrister Shailesh Mehta has told LBC that's unlikely to happen.
The courts have been fairly clear that ordinarily it's actions that matter, and that generally the areas one concerns with is national security, serious terrorism, espionage, and things of that sort. Ordinarily offensive or even potentially criminal speech generally can be dealt with by the criminal law process in this country rather than banishment.
The Cabinet Office says files referring to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor weren't supposed to be released to the National Archives. Ministers are being accused of covering up for the royal family after withholding files discussing his travel plans. And a union says thousands of its female members feel unsafe and embarrassed because they're forced to wear PPE designed for men. A survey by GMB found a fifth claim they couldn't do their job as a result. Problems included gloves becoming caught in machinery and respirators that don't seal properly. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
It's another busy Sunday in the Thing household. Mr. Thing is leaf-blowing, Ash is watching the footy, and the twins are power-washing the cars and everything else in sight. They're all making the most of half-price electricity from British Gas. Available every Sunday from 11am to 4pm with Peak Save. One of the ways we're taking care of things. Search British Gas half-price electricity to see what you could save. T's and C's apply, up to 60 kilowatts per session. Eligible tariff and smart meter required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good morning. 4 minutes past eight is the time. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. This hour, we will talk about the claim from Volodymyr Zelensky that Putin is sabotaging peace talks by claiming that Ukraine have struck one of his residences, something Ukraine deny. We'll bring you the latest on that. Also,
Beckham into Sheringham.
European Cup Final 1999. Recognise the voice. Clive Tilsley is one of the recipients of the New Year's honours. He joins Idris Elba, who's been knighted, as well as Torvill and Dean, who also have got honours. We will bring you a full roundup and speak with Clive Tilsley a little bit later on in the programme. And across England and Wales will crumble into disrepair if Chancellor Rachel Reeves introduces a planned stealth tax on historic buildings. That warning comes from the National Churches Trust. We'll speak with Sir Philip Rutnam, Chair of the Trust, later this hour.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Good morning to you. Talk this hour about Ukraine, and featured on a few of the front pages, the claims from Volodymyr Zelensky that Russia is now trying to sabotage peace talks and of preparing to bomb government buildings after the Kremlin said that they had foiled a Ukrainian drone attack on Vladimir Putin's residence. Now, Volodymyr Zelensky, I think in my view rightly, has described the claim as typical Russian lies following his two-hour meeting on Sunday with the president in Florida, Donald Trump, President Trump of the US. He said that Russia was at it again and using dangerous statements to undermine diplomatic efforts with the US to end the conflict. He said this alleged residence strike is a complete fabrication intended to justify additional attacks against Ukraine, including Kyiv, as well as Russia's own refusal to take necessary steps to end the war. To be honest, if you believe, really, that if you believe the Russians on this and think that Vladimir Putin's home was targeted, then I've got a house to sell you, because complete nonsense that would be the case. And I do tend to agree with Vladimir Zelensky's reading of it. Nonetheless, President Trump has criticised Vladimir Zelensky. Before we speak with a Ukrainian politician and with Ben Hodges, the former commander of the US Army in Europe, my LBC colleague Ian Payne spoke earlier on with the former British Army intelligence officer, Philip Ingram.
Classic Russian maskarovka, or masking. It's trying to throw people off the scent, and it's amazing, just as Zelensky finished his meeting with Donald Trump, talking about a potential peace deal, that the Russians come out with this. You know, they provided no evidence whatsoever, no mobile phone footage, no imagery. This is something that any other attack that goes in, the Russians are very quick to get that up on their Telegram and other channels to try and show what's going on.
Alexander Mereshko is chair of the Ukrainian Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee and joins me now. Do you share that sentiment that this is classic Russian propaganda? Good morning.
Absolutely, absolutely. We all know whom we are dealing with. And Russians have proved so many times that I have absolutely no doubt. And it was expected. It was expected because the timing is very indicative in this regard. When the peace talks between Ukrainian and American delegations have produced a peace plan, which is far from being perfect, but despite all this, it was supposed to be presented to Putin. Putin immediately in desperation started to look for an excuse, a pretext to disrupt negotiations and to reject this peace plan. So it's absolutely clear, even from logical point of view, you can see discrepancies, because on the one hand, Russians claim that there were more than 90 Ukrainian drones, and they don't report any damage done because of this. So for them, it's typical. But, you know, when they're lying, they cannot do properly.
Noting that Ukraine deny it, Donald Trump has said that he was very angry to learn about it. Would it be acceptable, in your view, to target Vladimir Putin's residence?
Well, first of all, I would like to remind that there was a resolution adopted by the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, according to which Putin was recognized as a terrorist and his regime as a terrorist regime. At the same time, he is an indicted war criminal. As an indicted war criminal, he has certain rights if he becomes prisoner of war, and I hope he will sooner or later. But as a terrorist, it's an interesting legal question. Can he be regarded as a legitimate military target?
And what's your view?
I'm professor of international law, and it's an interesting question to which there is no clear-cut answer.
Okay.
But, you know, the thing is that the comic situation is because Putin is trying to play victim. The terrorist, number one in the world, is trying to cause pity from President Trump, and it looks ridiculous to me.
What are your thoughts, your reflections on this meeting that took place in Mar-a-Lago between President Trump and Vladimir Zelensky, which both men, and as is often the case, praising the talk, saying they had gone well? Is that a reality? Do we need to get our skates on? Or given that Donald Trump called Vladimir Putin just before the meeting, should we actually be worried?
Well, it's kind of relative, and the spirit and the mood of this meeting between American and Ukrainian president was good. Let's recall what happened just in the beginning of this year. So we see definitely certain progress made. But at the same time, there are some sticking points which haven't been solved yet. I mean, first of all, so-called territorial issue, because for Ukraine, it's unacceptable. We cannot just withdraw our troops from our territory, and security guarantees. But luckily, you know, before Ukrainian diplomacy and our president, it's quite a challenge how to keep President Trump on the side of Ukraine and not let him to be on the side of Putin. It's very difficult. And I believe that our president and our diplomacy is doing miracles.
Thank you very much for your time. Alexander Mereshko is chair of the Ukrainian Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee. To Ben Hodges, who was previously the commanding general of the United States Army in Europe. Thank you for your time, Mr. Hodges. If I could ask you firstly on that point with which I finished with Alexander Mereshko, the talks, what was your response to the rhetoric coming out of Mar-a-Lago? Good morning.
Good morning, Henry. Well, first of all, I think it's clearer now than ever before that President Trump is unfortunately taking the side of the Kremlin. I mean, the fact that he has a two-hour phone call with Putin before he meets Zelensky, Putin uses that as an opportunity to reinforce the talking points he wants, particularly the one of the inevitability of Russian victory. I mean, that's critical when Trump says, you know, you're going to have to give up territory. It's better to do it in a deal rather than losing it later, as if it's inevitable. And I think that the president, the way he equated Russian attacks on Ukrainian civilian targets with the Ukrainian attacks on Russian oil and gas infrastructure, said, you know, basically it's the same thing. So he's empathetic. And then the most galling was when he said he sympathized with Putin on the how inconvenient it would be to stop for a ceasefire and then have to start again, how difficult that would be. I mean, this was is embarrassing and maybe his worst performance in a long list.
And he also said that President Putin wants what's best for Ukraine, which I think would be news to people in Kyiv. Can I ask you as well, the rhetoric that came out, though, was positive. Is that why we have this baseless claim from the Kremlin about attacking President Putin's home, would you argue?
You know, one of the people I follow very closely is Phillips O'Brien, who writes every day very good analysis of this. And he used the metaphor of the pantomime of what's going on, in that, and unfortunately, European leaders are falling for it. They keep talking, looking for any morsel of positiveness, which is exactly what the Kremlin needs and what Trump needs, so that no European countries actually take decisive action, because they don't want to be seen as the one that derailed what looks like it was going well. And so when Trump talks about, well, we had a great phone call, we're at 95%, it's almost all sorted. None of the meaningful things have been sorted. I mean, the one that the professor just mentioned, the land. I talked to Ukrainians. They said there is no way. It's strategically impossible for them to willingly give up land that the Russians are not even taking yet because of that particular geography. And so they're going to continue fighting with or without help from the United States, UK, or anybody else, just like I think most people would in such a situation.
And of course, the security guarantees are also tricky. But if we do focus on the land, which you mentioned, the Donbass region, of course, large parts of that, like Luhansk, are controlled by Russia, a huge percentage of that. What do you think happens to that territory?
Well, first of all, I think the Ukrainians have to sort of be seen as participating in these talks. And President Zelensky, I think, is wise to say, okay, we're prepared to do it. But there has to be a security guarantee with Western troops, whether it's U.S., British, German, Polish, whoever, in this so-called demilitarized zone. Because the Ukrainians know that the Russians have never, ever lived up to any agreement that they were not forced to, with which they were not forced to comply. So a security guarantee is only going to be if there are credible forces on the ground with rules of engagement that allow them to immediately strike back and inflict consequences on the Russians who would have violated any sort of ceasefire. So I think this is President Zelensky probably calling the bluff of the American president, because he doesn't trust President Trump. And I think I would encourage all European leaders to be very wary about believing in any Trump administration guarantee for Ukraine.
Lastly, we are approaching 4 years since the start of this invasion and the subsequent war which has followed. Donald Trump promised to end this on day one. Do you think 2026 will be the year that we finally see some sort of agreement, some sort of ceasefire?
I think it's possible, but it won't be because of the Trump administration's negotiating approach. Their approach, and by the way, it's worth remembering, this war started in 2014, so more than 11 years ago. That's an important thing to remember, because that's when the Russians took Crimea and part of the Donbass way back then. So the possibility of the war ending in 2026 is more likely due to, I think, Russia's economy finally collapsing because of the persistent attacks by Ukraine on Russia's oil and gas infrastructure. And as I see, more and more European countries are finally taking action to stop the flow of Russian oil using these shadow fleet vessels. That's what will eventually bring down Russia.
And just, sorry, one other question. With the rules of engagement, would it have been acceptable? I know that they completely deny it, but I'm just curious for your view on whether you would go for President Putin's mansion or home.
I'd like to capture it and turn it over to the poor people of the surrounding oblast and let them take what they like. The big headline for me in that was that President Trump immediately took Putin's claim, even though he has the biggest intelligence apparatus on the planet. He immediately took Putin's claim.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. Ben Hodges is former commander of the US Army in Europe. Tony, you'll be the next caller. Keen for your view as well. Do you, well, firstly, on the propaganda side, I mean, we can probably all agree that this is nonsense from the Russians. I hope we can agree that, and that this sort of baseless claim of President Putin's home being attacked is not true. But I'm curious to know if you are more optimistic than Ben Hodges there, the former senior US Army official. Do you think 2026 will be the year that we see an end to this conflict? 0345 6060 973. Your calls in a moment. First though, 8:17 is the time. Let's get the news headlines with Amelia Cox.
Actors Idris Elba and Warwick Davis and figure skaters Torval and Dean have been recognised in this year's New Year's Honours list. Two people killed in a crash in Nigeria, which left Anthony Joshua injured, have been identified as two of his close friends and team. And the Cabinet Office has denied covering up for the royal family after files referring to Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor were withheld from public record. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb in Bromley. Market Square is closed westbound because of emergency repair works. And in Woolwich, Sandy Hill Roads had to be closed in both directions, and that's because a car is on fire. Very busy on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road, southbound from the main M4 down to the terminals. On the Underground, the District Line can't run today between Earls Court and Kensington Olympia for engineering works. And there are minor delays on the Bakerloo line after a signal failure. On the trains, Greater Anglia, Stansted Express and Weaver Line trains aren't going to and from Liverpool Street Station again today for the engineering works, and no southeastern trains as well throughout today to and from Victoria.
This is LBC.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Booking Hero. On the beach, no does city breaks. Flippin' heck, I'm gonna have to change the name. On the city? Not sure about that. But you can take your pick from over 50 cities and thousands of hotels. Stop booking around and visit onthebeach.co.uk.
On the beach.
This is LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. Globalacademy.com.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
Henry Riley on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:21 is the time. Good morning, Henry Riley with you here on LBC. Pleasure to have your company. Later on this hour, we'll be reflecting on who has got an honour. We'll be joined by one of those, Clive Tilsley, the legendary football commentator who's been awarded an OBE for services to broadcasting and charity. So you will hear his view and plus a sort of roundup of who has got one in a moment. Idris Elba has been knighted. First, though, we're talking about Ukraine. Tony is in Barnum. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Henry.
Hi there, sir.
Happy New Year.
Yes, Merry Christmas as well. We're still in the 12 days
of Christmas. Merry Christmas, yes. Yeah. Anyone with an ounce of common sense will realise this has all been set up by the Russians to scupper the peace talks. Unfortunately, Donald Trump doesn't have any. This...
Doesn't have any... Oh, common sense, right.
Common sense,
yeah.
Speaking of... But as far as I thought that they sort of looked a bit uncomfortable. They sort of gave a good saying that the peace talks have gone well yesterday. I didn't think he looked too comfortable, Zelensky.
Well, I don't think he would be after what happened last time.
Exactly. And so I don't think he trusts anything Trump says. He says one thing 1 minute, and then that's the only consistent thing about Trump.
I agree, he did, consistent. Yeah, and I'd say I agree with what our former Ben Hodges, the former commander of the US Army in Europe, when he basically said, and we fall into this trap as well as the media, I'm happy to admit, but as soon as Trump says something vaguely positive, like plucks a figure out the air and says, we're 95% done, then we all go mad and we go, well, has he done it again? And perhaps we need to take a look and maybe look at sort of hard evidence rather than taking everything at face value.
And then he says, what's the other 5%?
Well, quite. But there was a time where you would take what the US president said completely at face value, but maybe we're not in that situation. Go on, Tony.
The problem also is that they're talking about the security promises.
Yeah, the guarantees.
Ukraine already has security promises, but they didn't protect them.
What, in the Budapest Memorandum of the 90s?
They gave up the nuclear weapons.
Yeah. Well, quite.
You know, and Biden's got to take some blame for this as well. I mean, the whole point of NATO is to stand up to the Russians, basically.
You can sort of understand why Donald Trump wants to get it right, because, I mean, in Korea, for example, the US originally deployed, it was something like 300,000 soldiers, and there's still to this day 25,000-odd soldiers on the border in Korea. So you can understand why they want to get the security guarantees right. Having said that, every sort of month and year that goes on, then more and more Ukrainians are losing their lives.
Yeah, but if they'd have just made the threat, just like JFK did when they had the
Cuban missile crisis.
Yes, exactly. He just had to make the threat of troops on ground, and this war would never have happened.
Mm.
Yep. And I think the only way this war is going to end properly, that Ukraine don't give up any land and Russia don't gain anything, is by the threat of troops or putting troops in there. And of course, they won't do that.
Yes, and I think it was the Cuban Missile Crisis where Khrushchev, the then Soviet leader, sent two letters. One was sort of slightly more amicable, saying that they were sort of not willing to escalate. And then he sent a subsequent letter where he was basically going full throttle, and JFK chose to ignore the second letter. And the rest is sort of history, so they say. Tony, thank you. More calls on Ukraine in a moment. 0345 606 0973, the number to call. Will 2026 be the year that we finally, and not least the Ukrainians will be hoping this, who were invaded, but we finally get a resolution or a deal? But of course it has to be the right one. There's no point in rushing into something that doesn't work for the country that has ultimately been invaded. 8:25 is the time. In a completely different story, churches will vanish if tax break axed. Churches will crumble into disrepair if Rachel Reeves scraps a tax break for the historic building, campaigners have warned. Now, when she became Chancellor back in 2024, of course, at the election, Ms. Reeves watered down a Tory policy which allowed sites to offset VAT payable on, or ecclesiastical sites, I should say, to be specific, are to offset all VAT payable on repair bills by capping the allowance at £25,000 a year. It is now said that she is removing that tax break entirely. Sir Philip Rutnam is chair of the National Churches Trust and is behind this warning. That there's a lot to take in when it comes to budgetary policies and fiscal policies. Everyone's sort of worried about what specifically affects them. Could you just go into more detail on that policy? So what was the policy then, and what is the proposal, Sir Philip? Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Henry. Good morning. Actually, you said it was a Tory policy. Well, the Tories kept it in place, but originally it was introduced by Gordon Brown, by Labour Chancellor, well over 20 years ago. And the thing is, like churches, actually other historic places of worship, synagogues, there are some mosques and others, they account for half the country's historic buildings, most important historic buildings, but they're also incredibly important community centres. You know, almost all food banks are based in churches, you know, thousands of community groups based there, youth groups and so on. So they've got this really special place in our life as a country. And what successive governments have recognised is that because it's local people who've got to raise the money to look after them, to fix the roof, the tower, the spire and all that kind of stuff, that they shouldn't have to pay the cost of VAT on those repairs. You shouldn't have to pay an extra 20% when they're fixing the building to go to the government. And that policy was kept in place for years and years and years. And unfortunately, under this government, it's been capped. The budget has been halved, and there's been a limit put of 25,000 quid on the amount that an individual building can reclaim in VAT, which is not that much if you've really got to replace the roof. And this whole system looks like it's going to end in March. So basically, come the end of March, any of these historic places of worship, when they've got to raise hundreds of thousands of pounds to fix the roof or whatever, they're going to have to raise 20% more than that to pay back to the government.
So just to be clear, the cap came in under Labour.
The cap came in just about a year ago. But also Labour said there's no guarantee this policy is going to carry on beyond March 2026. And at the moment, it looks like it's going to run out 31st of March.
And you talk about a lot of these buildings, these religious sites, of course, not just in the Church of England, as you rightly say, but being real hubs of the community. But also, if we are to get down to brass tacks, they also do a lot of good in terms of money contributed. I read that for every £1 invested in local churches, for example, £16 is reinvested in the local community.
Yeah, well, we did a big study of what's actually happening in these buildings, and it's just extraordinary. You know, kind of people take them for granted. They walk past them each day, but I mentioned there's thousands of food banks based in churches. There's also most amateur music making takes place in churches. There's also things like nurseries, creches, and so when you add all that up, the social value, the value to society, is exactly that. It's 16 times the amount that gets put in. So they're kind of really taken for granted as part of our country's social infrastructure. And we know their condition is decaying. We know that because these buildings are really old, because it costs a lot to keep them up, over time, actually, the need to spend more money on them has just grown. And in truth, we're just going to go further underwater if the government takes away this VAT refund.
Thank you for your time and for joining us. Sir Philip Rutnam is chair of the National Churches Trust. Sandy, I hope you can hold. You will be the next caller and we'll also talk about this.
Are they prepared to stick up for workers unashamedly? If they are, that's great. If they're not, then they're not the person for me.
The tough-talking boss of the Unite Union, Sharon Graham, who certainly doesn't hold back, has now written in the Times saying the government risks sowing the seeds of its own destruction if Keir Starmer's successor in Downing Street does not depart from its current path. Already talking senior union officials about the next Labour leader, but how helpful is that? More in a moment. 8:30 the time, the news with Amelia Cox.
Actor Idris Elba and Olympic champions Jane Torval and Christopher Dean have been named in the New Year honours list. England women's football and rugby teams have also been recognised following their successes this year. It's emerged two people killed in a crash in Nigeria, which also saw Anthony Joshua injured, were his close friends and members of his team. Sinigami and Latif Ayodele were travelling in a jeep alongside the boxer when it hit a stationary truck on a busy highway. And the Cabinet Office is being accused of covering up for the royal family over official papers withheld from the National Archives. The government department says the files, which refer to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, had never been intended for release. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
I'm Nick Ferrari. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC.
It's not a racist at all to have concerns about your children, one of whom's going to secondary school soon.
If not being a racist means my children are subject to being murdered, going about their daily business, I'll quite happily say that I am.
Is there much point continuing this conversation? Because you don't know where a bridge starts, you don't know where it ends, and you don't know how much it costs.
Nigel Farage came up and claimed you had an obsession with him.
No, that's not the case. I am deeply concerned about reform because I think they will toxically divide our
country. You mentioned Mr. Farage five times.
You are mildly obsessed.
I'll be back in the new year taking your calls on LBC.
Thinking about goals this time of year? Like saving money or buying a new car? Well, right now you can save £3,750 on the all-electric Mini Countryman with the electric car grant. Yep, two goals in one and you get more space, more adventure, more Mini than ever. I feel a cheeky little smile coming on. Start living the big life for less and save £3,750 with the electric car grant. Visit mini.co.uk/grant. Grant available for specifications up to £42,000. T's and C's apply.
The next sale. At least 50% off all next sale items. Now on, in store and online. Check stores for opening times while stocks last.
You know, sometimes you just want to mosey. Travel your own world. Slow things down a mite, meet the locals, and smell the coffee. So friends, take time to sit down with the folks at Little America and let them tailor-make your trip to Canada and the U.S. just the way you like it. for slow travel that nourishes the soul. Head to littleamerica.co.uk.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggies, Duck Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with Henry Reilly. Text 84850.
8:34 the time. Good morning. Tuesday the 30th of December, and you're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. We are talking about Ukraine, not least because of those important talks that took place in Florida a few days ago, but now the Russians have accused Ukraine of trying to effectively target Vladimir Putin's home with a drone. The Ukrainians deny this, but Donald Trump has said he's very angry. Yeah, doesn't seem like he's consulted US intelligence. He's just sort of gone off what the Russians have said. Your views on that? Sandy is in Amersham. Hello, Sandy.
Hello, Henry.
Hello.
I don't think that the war will end this year. I don't think it will end any time that Putin's still in power, because he's a warmonger. It's part of his makeup to be strong, heroic, fight. He can't. If he was to agree to anything, it would show weakness.
Yeah.
I mean, he plays games with the talks. He comes in showing that, yes, he's listening, he's interested, he wants to be part of some solution. But then he just pulls away and plays a game, pulls the string up and lets everybody down and starts to think differently, that it's just not going to end.
He plays Donald Trump like a fiddle, doesn't he? I mean, he was saying that Ukraine, Vladimir Putin wants Ukraine to succeed. By the way, when you said this year, given we've only got sort of 40 hours left or whatever, 30, but the thing is that, I mean, people will say that whoever replaces Vladimir Putin is not exactly going to be soft on Ukraine.
No, he won't be soft, but he will want to do things differently. It depends on Putin is got a perverted sort of makeup. He needs to be fighting something to show strength. He's a little man that looks fairly insignificant. If you look at his behavior, how he enters into anything through these massive doors, he always has to look like he is, you know, the big man, the power, and he's not.
I think you're right.
He will play games. This is a life war game. And while he can, he will. Others that come behind him won't be great. They won't be sort of people that we like ruling a country, but they won't necessarily want to be constantly in the game of war.
Well, hopefully we get a good, like sort of with the Soviet Union, we went through a list of pretty horrific leaders, and then we ended up getting to Gorbachev. Let's sort of hope the same could happen here. Sandy, thank you. In Amersham, I know there's a very simplistic way of putting it, but this from Tony, oh goodness, you believe NATO propaganda because it's your job to push it. President Putin has cancer again and 15 million Russians have been killed, blah, blah, blah. Name the last battle Ukraine won. Oh, God, you're boring, Tony. You're so on the side of the... Every message you send in, I've had a look, you are... It's like you say I'm being paid by NATO. You're being paid by the Russians. It seems unbelievable talking about the last war Ukraine won. Thank you, anyway, for your message in. This from... Where's it gone? With regards to the church. And we were talking earlier on with Sir Philip Rutnam, the chair of the Churches Commission. Where's it gone? It's from Tess, who says, my local church is a food bank with free cash and an early learning centre and a hub where the homeless can get a free breakfast and talk about supporting it with kind donations. Jackie has actually called in on that subject in Kenley in Surrey. Hello, Jackie.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. What did you want to say?
Well, I'm a church warden of a local church. People don't realise that any repairs to our church, anything we have to do to our church, is all down to the congregation. We don't get a penny from the actual church itself. We have to contribute. Well, not we pay for everything. I mean, it's only the congregation. So if we need a roof replacement, we have to pay for it. It's crazy. It's a grade two listed building. We have to actually pay for our vicars and everything to take the services. So we pay the church itself. The church doesn't keep our building going. We do.
Yeah.
And our congregation is dwindling because we're not getting the younger people there. We unfortunately don't have a hall or anything so we can rent out to get money. We're a grade two little church and we're trying to keep it open. We're down to only two services a month now because we can't afford to put the heating on. But we pay for everything. So this VAT is going to hit us hard.
Yeah. And do you have any repairs that you need? What are the repairs that you need doing in the near future?
Well, we've just had to do our front door because that was rotting. We've got, at the moment, we're trying to just keep the gutters clear and things like that. But it's all to do with volunteers helping out. And we can't, when it's grade two listed, you can't just get your local decorator to come and decorate it.
I know.
But people don't realise we don't get anything from the church. And this VAT helps us. I mean, we sometimes have a congregation only of about 8 or 12 of us. And we have to try and keep this grade two listed building going just because we want to. And it's a beautiful building. People want to get married there. People want to have Christmas. We don't charge for funerals.
Mm.
We're a little community. We have space for the gardening, electricity.
And as you say, you can't put the heating on because of the cost as well.
No. And the VAT is really, really going to affect us. We're just trying to keep it. It's a 14th century church, and we're trying to keep it open. And it's really difficult. People don't realise we don't get any, none of the churches get any money from the church itself.
Yeah, it comes all from local donations. Thank you, Jackie. Yeah, it does seem to me, I know the problem is every sector is sort of lobbying the Chancellor not to touch their particular area of policy, but it does seem in terms of churches, if you completely scrap this VAT exemption, then a lot of churches are going to really struggle. We've already had Labour MPs banned from pubs and banned from barbers, as we were discussing yesterday. I don't think the church, it's pretty unlikely the church are going to ban Labour MPs, but I think making these representations is probably quite important. 8:40 is the time. Front page of the Times today, yet more talk of a leadership change, this time from someone who should be, on paper, quite friendly to Labour, Sharon Graham, the General Secretary of the Union Unite, one of Labour's biggest, in fact they are the biggest trade union donor, saying it is inevitable that Keir Starmer will be replaced as Labour leader. Chris Lee is a former Labour advisor, now head of media strategy at Cavendish Consulting. Well, it makes a change that it's not Labour MPs speculating on the future of Keir Starmer, but how much notice will Downing Street take of Sharon Graham's intervention? Morning,
Henry. I read Sharon's article this morning. There wasn't sort of much content in there as far as I could see in terms of sort of solutions rather than just talking to sort of various issues. For the listeners that may or may not be aware, so Sharon Graham, as the head of Unite the Union, is from a different wing, I suppose, of the Labour movement. So I don't suppose really her critique this morning will come as much of a surprise to anyone in Downing Street.
And she says at one point, a new Labour leader with the same policies won't cut it. Replacing Keir with Angela, i.e. Rayner, Andy, the Mayor of Greater Manchester, Wes or Ed, treating a Miliband respectfully, won't persuade workers to return to the fold. So who's she got her eye on then, do you think? Who else is left?
You know what, Henry? I was thinking the same thing. I'm not really sure who cuts the mustard in Sharon's analysis. You know, obviously her politics is more closely aligned with that of Jeremy Corbyn. Jeremy's leader of the Labour Party had two cracks at a general election in 17 and 19 and lost both of them. So, you know, I'm not really sure who they've got in mind. But even people there that, you know, are sort of from a strong trade union background, like Angela Rayner, she's saying isn't up to a top job either. So I'm not really sure who she's thinking of, to be honest.
As a former Labour advisor, you'll know that this talk is still happening among Labour MPs, not just outspoken union bosses like Sharon Graham, but it is going on among the sort of rank and file of the party. What needs to change? Is it the man? Is it the policies? Is it the communication, or possibly all three?
You know what, Henry, like, you're right. This is taking up a lot of headspace in Labour circles. You know, a lot of discussions, almost every discussion I have with someone, it can turn to talking about sort of the leadership and different challenges and what might happen over the course of 2026. And I think it's a bit of a pastime of Labour people to be really sort of like thinking about the next leader and kind of where that all goes. To be honest, my honest kind of view is like, you know, there's a big set of elections in May, local elections in sort of Labour strongholds, you know, London, Birmingham, Wales. I've got elections, all our elections as well. So I think let's wait and see how those elections go for Keir Starmer. But, there is this big sort of preoccupation, I think, with, just saying, well, you know, we'll change the leader and everything will be fixed. Well, we know it won't be, you know, given the state of the country that Labour inherited when they came in 18 months ago. There was a lot of deep-seated problems, which they were very clear. It was going to take 10 years, you know, 10-year plan to sort of implement changes and put it all right. So, you know, the fact that change hasn't happened sort of within 18 months, I think that's unexpected. But, you know, Starmer's been pretty clear. He wants to really sort of supercharge things in 2026. And as I always say, especially around this time of year, the proof of the pudding's in the eating, Henry.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciated. Chris Lee is a former Labour advisor, now head of media strategy at Cavendish Consulting. A lot of messages coming in on churches. Amy in Kent says, I always get so angry that the Church of England, which has millions, if not billions of funds, does not pay for individual church repairs. And instead they rely on the kind volunteers like the lady who just rang in. It is disgraceful. Nick says, if the church can afford to set up a £100 million fund for slavery reparations against advice, as we discussed previously, then they can pay their tax. Well, again, that seems to be the central pot, as opposed to the issue there, Nick, is I think that, as our volunteer explained, this is coming down to the individual churches. And Brendan says, isn't the king the head of the church? He gets £45 million pay rise and his brother has a £12 million to pay off someone he never met. That's with regards to Andrew, Matt Bat Windsor, and is driving in a Range Rover. So why are the churches are struggling? I think there probably is an argument about the royal family, but whether it would sort of solve all the church repairs, I'm not entirely sure. And this says from Barbara, the church are an institution that should pay, not the government. The church is extremely wealthy. But again, it's not the government paying. It's about that exemption. More calls on that in a moment. 0345 60 60 973. If, like that previous caller, you're involved in your local church, we'd very much like to hear from you. Also,
was it all worth it? We've learned nothing. I say we, governments, successive governments. Most important thing is to be so strong that should come before anything else.
We'll talk honours. That was 101-year-old Mervyn Kirsch speaking with me last month. He's been awarded a British Empire Medal, as well as...
It's towards Gerrard! Hello! Here we go! Stephen Gerrard puts a grain of doubt in the back of Milan minds.
An OBE for the legendary commentator Clive Tilsley, who joins us next. 8:45 the time, the news with Amelia Cox.
Idris Elba has been made a knight and Lionesses manager Serena Wiegmann receives an honorary damehood in this year's New Year's honours. Anthony Joshua has spent the night in hospital following a crash in Nigeria which killed two members of his team. And the Cabinet Office is being accused of covering up by withholding files referring to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from public record. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The West Cross route is closed southbound in Shepherd's Bush down to the Holland Park roundabout, and that's because of an accident, so the emergency services are all on the scene, so definitely do expect delays. Also, problems continue in Woolwich. Sandy Hill Road is closed in both directions at Nightingale Place, and that was after a car was on fire earlier. Very busy on the M4 Heathrow Spur Road going southbound from the main M4 down to the terminals. On the trains, no southeastern services again today at Victoria and no Greater Anglia, Weaver Line and Stansted Express services to and from Liverpool Street. On the underground, the Bakerloo Line can't run between Paddington and Elephant and Castle.
This is LBC.
This Christmas, McDonald's and the Elf on the Shelf are bringing festive tasks to your little ones, like writing a Christmas card for your postie.
Thank you. You're one happy helper.
Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 30th of December, from 11 a.m. Includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last. Subject to availability, fair ordering policy applies.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable, and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Ready for that dream trip? From London Gatwick, fly Singapore Airlines to Singapore and seamlessly connect with a choice of 9 destinations across Australia and New Zealand. With daily flights and award-winning service, your next adventure starts here. Fares to Australia starting from £873. Book your adventure today at singaporeair.com. Offer ends 26th of January. Terms and conditions apply.
Thinking about goals this time of year? Like saving money or buying a new car? Well, right now you can save £3,750 on the all-electric Mini Countryman with the Electric Car Grant. Yep, two goals in one and you get more space, more adventure, more Mini than ever. I feel a cheeky little smile coming on. Start living the big life for less and save £3,750 with the Electric Car Grant. Visit mini.co.uk/grant. Grant available for specifications up to £42,000. T's and C's apply.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker now. Just say, play LBC.
8:49 is the time. Coming up after 9, we're going to be speaking about a story that is in the front page of The Guardian. 1 in 3 believe Britishness is dependent on being born in the UK. This is a poll that The Guardian say reveals a rise in ethno-nationalist approach to identity. Your views on that after 9. First, though, I want to talk to you about the honours and who has been in receipt of the various honours and medals that are given out. My colleague Helen Hoddenott gives us the latest.
I need to stop this man. I'm still a copper.
From fictional law enforcer in Luther...
Why does he make an announcement?
...to real-life knife crime campaigner, Idris Elba has been knighted for his services to young people.
It's a nationwide issue, and it's growing.
Joining him in knighthood and damehood are ice skating legends Jane Torvill and Christopher Dean.
What a marvellous, marvellous set of marks!
Almost 42 years after they danced to Olympic gold in Sarajevo in 1984. Sticking with sport, and Gabby Logan, broadcaster and presenter of Global's The Sports Agents podcast, has been made an OBE.
You get caught in the rain inside Old Trafford.
You do, but let's not talk about that now.
While England's Lionesses feature heavily after their Euros win in the summer, with captain Leah Williamson made a CBE. And three-time London Marathon winner Paula Radcliffe, who held the women's marathon world record for 16 years, has been awarded an OBE.
The record books are being rewritten by Britain's darling Paula Radcliffe.
To the world of entertainment, where Roy Clark, the creator of Last of the Summer Wine and Open All Hours, has been knighted.
Do you think I'm attractive to women?
Well, only if they're looking for someone to work at 20,000 fathoms.
And actress, comedian and writer Meera Syal, best known for her roles in Goodness Gracious Me and The Kumars at Number 42, has been honoured with a damehood.
In your dreams, whichever body you are.
While Matt Lucas, one half of the Little Britain duo, has been awarded an OBE.
New bat, year bat, new bat, year bat, new bat.
And Paul Elliott, one half of the Chuckle Brothers, has been awarded an MBE.
You see, the business world is crying out for new ideas, a new approach. All that you need is a clever mind.
Well, where are we going to get one of those?
In music, chart-topping singer Ellie Goulding has been made an MBE.
Something has changed within me.
While also soaring onto the list with an MBE is Wicked actress Cynthia Erivo.
Cynthia Erivo concluding that package from Helen Hoddenott. Got a lot of people in there, my goodness, didn't we? Someone else who deserves a special mention. How many of you, by the way, can say that you've been to a 100th birthday party? Well, I'm going to boast here and say that I have. And Mervyn Kirsch, who is 101 years old of Cockfosters in North London, has been awarded, quite rightly, a British Empire Medal. Now, he landed 3 days after the D-Day landings, was part of that landings in June 1944. He served as a technical clerk in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. He also was stationed near Bergen-Belsen and helped liberate the camp. An extraordinary man. I've interviewed him a few times, not just at his 100th birthday. I had the pleasure of going back to Normandy with him last year in order to go back to those beaches. And I spoke to him again just last month at the Remembrance Day parade.
I was sent to go to Berlin. I was waiting to be picked up, and I realised that while I was waiting, it was only 3 miles from Bergen-Belsen. So the 2 weeks I was waiting, I went there every day.
And how do you reflect lastly, Mervyn? Commemorate it was 80 years since D-Day, of course. How do you look back now?
Was it all worth it? We've learned nothing. I say we, governments, successive governments. Because, as I say, the most important thing is to be so strong that you come before anything else. Lower this, cheaper this, and freer that. The main thing is to have strong defence than anyone else.
Yeah.
I know it's a race and waste of money, but it saves our liberty. It saves having wars. I have in mind at the moment someone called Putin who attacked somebody and got away with it.
Your message is to stand up to bullies, as you said earlier.
The first time any army crosses the border, if they still do, any time the first sign of aggression anywhere, the whole world should unite and stamp on them immediately, individually, no matter about the country.
Mervyn Kirsch speaking with me in central London just last month. Huge congratulations to him, 101 years old, and he is in receipt of a very much well-deserved British Empire Medal. So we've covered a lot of the names that have been mentioned so far. One other.
It was Gerrard!
A huge congratulations to Clive Tilsley, the legendary football commentator who has been awarded an OBE for services to broadcasting and charity. And delighted to say Clive joins me now. Thank you for joining us. Congratulations. I always have to ask, when did you find out and how have you kept it shtum for so long?
Once upon a time, I worked regularly on Champions League games, and Sir Alec Ferguson, on the lunchtime before a major game that Manchester United were playing, would have a little clandestine meeting with myself and Des Lynam, and actually let us into his team selection for that evening's game. So that is a bigger secret than keeping an OBE from my family, I can assure you, because if he's left Beckham on the bench, you almost don't want to know. I've known for a month or so. And only my wife and I have known, so we've kept it from our children. Our daughter's actually getting married tomorrow.
So
it's a very, very special celebration time for us. But yeah, I was able to share it with them all last night, which was nice.
My goodness. And do you get a letter? Is it still done that way?
Yeah. It comes through the post. It's fairly dramatic, really. And it's still surreal. I mean, it doesn't... In a sense, you know this better than anybody, Henry. It doesn't really change anybody's opinions of you. We are all a matter of opinion, broadcasters. As the great Barry Davis once said, one man's commentator is another man's pain in the backside. And so in many ways, it's I see it, and I'm not being overly, modest here. Broadcasting is a team event. We know that, you know, the people that we work with, people that just, the technical people who get us on air. So you're always part of a team when you're broadcasting. And similarly, you know, football's kind of opened my eyes and opened doors to various causes and charities that have become very dear to me in the last few years. And, you know, however much I am able to give, there are people who are giving nearly all of themselves to those causes and charities. And if I can use this voice of mine to somehow amplify those causes, then, yeah, I mean, that's something I'm really happy to do.
And talk us through, we've spoken about the broadcasting, some of that charity work you've done, Clive. What charities are you involved with?
I think that probably the one that I've been the longest lasting association has been with the Bobby Moore Fund. Bobby Moore died at the age of 51 from bowel cancer. He was misdiagnosed. And his widow, Stephanie, started a charity which is associated with Cancer Research UK, the Bobby Moore Fund. And it's really an echo of the King's message at Christmas, really, about early diagnosis. And we are so stupid, human beings. You know, we don't want to see something. We don't look. And I'm sort of getting to an age now where I've had one or two checks in the last couple of years. And they're terribly invasive and a little terrifying. But actually, not only are they necessary, but the relief that you get when the all clear comes through is better than getting that OBE letter. And so... Yeah. I can't cure anybody, but I can stand up in front of a room of people and say, check yourselves. Come on. You know, that's what the NHS is there for. In my experience, and other people have different experiences, all of my dealings with the NHS in recent years have been absolutely wonderful. I trust them. And so we've got to trust them too. And that really is the part that I play in the Bobby Moore Fund and Cancer Research UK, just getting people to check themselves and to get their loved ones to check themselves too.
Lastly, Clive, I can't have you on and not ask you about football. The two teams I'll be supporting next year are Arsenal, who are currently top of the league, as you know, and England, of course, when they head to the United States, Mexico and Canada for the World Cup. Am I going to be doubly happy next year in the thoughts of Clive Tilsley?
I think Arsenal will win one of the two major trophies that they're going for, either the Premier League title or the Champions League, or maybe both. But I just feel as if, for all the anxieties that you as an Arsenal fan are going through and no doubt are being felt within that dressing room, I think the depth of the squad now is such that you can survive any travails that come your way.
I hope you're right.
I'm not sure the rest of the field is as strong as it has been in a couple of your runner-up seasons in recent times. Mm. England's a difficult one. I don't see us being appreciably better than we've been under Sir Gareth Southgate in recent tournaments. But then we've been very nearly good enough in a couple of those tournaments. It's going to be a strange tournament. You deal a lot with politics. It's going to be a strange tournament, full stop. It's going to be a Trump-Infantino tournament to begin with. But it is going to be played in taxing temperatures and managing that as well as all the crazy expectations that we all have entering a tournament. And let's just keep our fingers crossed that there are three or four teams from the British Isles involved, because that will make it, I think, a really special World Cup summer for all of us.
Yeah, and let's hope Wales qualify too. Best wishes to your daughter for tomorrow, and congratulations once again on your OBE for services to broadcasting and charity. Clive Tilsley there, the legendary football commentator. You're listening to LBC with me, Henry Reilly, and it's 1 minute past nine.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, actor Idris Elba is knighted and England's women's football coach Serena Wiegmann is made an honorary dame in the New Year honours. Co-host of Global's The Sports Agents podcast, Gabby Logan, is also among those recognised in the list. The Prime Minister says the honours celebrate the very best of Britain. Figure skaters Jane Torvill and Christopher Dean became a dame and sir and say they're thrilled.
It's like a little kid jumping up and down. He can sit still.
I mean, it's such an amazing award to receive this, and an honour. Yeah. And we're really humbled by it. We've been together for 50 years and skated and performed and entertained over all that time.
Community champions, including foster carers and health workers, have also been recognised. Anthony Joshua has spent a night in hospital after being injured in a crash in Nigeria, which killed two members of his team. Sinagami and Latif Ayadeli died after the jeep they were travelling in crashed into a stationary vehicle. Australian police say there's Excuse me, there's no evidence the suspected Bondi Beach gunman received terrorist training during a trip to the Philippines. The father and son spent November in the country, though we're told rarely left their hotel room. 15 people were killed when gunmen targeted an event to celebrate the first day of Hanukkah earlier this month. Shopkeeper Ahmed Al-Ahmed tells CBS about the moment he tackled one attacker to the ground.
I couldn't handle it to hear a kid's and the woman and oldest and man screaming and asking for help and no one help.
The Cabinet Office has been accused of covering up for the royal family after withholding files from the National Archives. Ministers say the documents referring to Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's travel plans were never intended to be released. And Plymouth, Stafford and Wigan have been identified as the housing hotspots of 2025. They all saw values rise by more than 10% this year. London was the only region where prices fell slightly. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 13 points at 98.79. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing. A few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
4 minutes past nine is the time. Good morning. You're listening to Henry Reilly, Infinite Ferrari here on LBC for your breakfast show. Lovely to have your company. We're going to be talking this hour. One in three Brits believe Britishness is dependent on being born in the UK. The number of people who think that has doubled in nearly 2 years. Research warn of an increase of ethno-nationalism in the UK. What does Britishness mean to you? We'll discuss that next. Also,
there's a theory test and then you'll do your flight assessment. You just have to complete some set tasks in order to pass.
Yes, have you done your theory test? Many new UK drone users must now take their test before flying outside. What exactly are the requirements? Maybe you've got a drone for Christmas. If so, we will bring you the very latest and actually ask, is it okay to start flying your drone outside randomly? I think it's probably quite a good thing that there are some restrictions coming in. I don't know if we want drones just flying around willy-nilly. And
all he's done is make some really disgusting, filthy comments. That's all he's done.
That's all he's done, says the view of David Imbalam on Ala Abd El Fattah, the Egyptian Brit who has come over to the UK, who's previously said about killing Zionists, says that he hates white people, and about killing the police. Is it really as simple as David points out?
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Good morning. Front page of The Guardian today, an exclusive poll for the paper. One in three Brits believe that Britishness is dependent on being born in the UK. A poll details the rise, so say The Guardian, in ethno-nationalist approach to identity. The number of people who believe that Britishness is something you are born with has almost doubled in 2 years, according to research that warns of a rise of ethno-nationalism in Britain. Although a majority of the public still believe that British is rooted in shared values, a growing proportion see it as a product of ethnicity, birthplace and ancestry, according to analysis pointed out, or carried out, I should say, by the IPPR, which is the Institute for Public Policy Research. And we'll be speaking with someone from that organisation in just a moment. About one in three people thought a person must be born in Britain to be truly British, which is up from one in five. Well, that would mean that Boris Johnson is probably the obvious example, given he was born in New York, is not British, according to that cohort of people. A YouGov poll that was carried out this month for the think tank, the IPPR. Now, supporters of Nigel Farage's Reform UK held the most extreme views, so says the paper, of any party backers, with 71% saying that having British ancestry was a prerequisite for being truly British, and 59% believing that the nation was an ethnic, not civic, community. What does being British mean to you? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. How would you define it? Dr. Parth Patel is Associate Director at the Institute for Public Policy Research, who conducted this research. Do you subscribe to the way it's portrayed in the paper, Dr. Patel, that this is part of an increase in ethno-nationalism in Britain? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Henry. Yeah, I think I broadly do. So, the headline that they've run with is reflecting on one particular question, which is sort of asking people, is being British something you can become, or is it something you're born with? And there's been quite a notable shift in people's outlooks on that over the past 2 years. And we've seen a rise in the number of people who say it's just something you're born with, and a decline in the number of people who say actually, being British is just something you become if you respect a certain set of institutions and values. And that's what they're reporting on. And I think that is actually reasonable evidence for a rise in ethno-nationalism. What I do want to be clear is that's a pretty short period of time, just 2 years, for so many people, from 1 in 5 to 1 in 3 people in the country, to change their fundamental outlook. That's very unlikely. So what we're probably seeing here is that people with sort of weak ethno-nationalist sympathies, sort of not really strongly believing that, they're being authorized and actively encouraged to express them with much greater conviction. Now, whether that's in a survey, which is what this finding is reporting on, whether that's on social media, or whether that's on the streets, we've seen serious shifts in that over the past year or two. And my view, the IPPR's view, the researchers' view, is that that's because there's a new group of politicians and activists on the right who are trying to change society, how we see ourselves and how we see each other from the top down. And they're undoing the norms that usually deem prejudice and ethno-nationalist views as unacceptable. They're being undone. And you're seeing prominent politicians like Reform Party politicians, Conservative Party politicians, activists like Tommy Robinson, who are sort of actively saying, well, actually, being British is about dissent. It's about ancient rights and historical claims. And they're making these arguments almost uncontestedly. And the opposition to them is largely about, well, that wouldn't work, right? Because Boris Johnson is not born in Britain. Or, well, there are all these Indians and Black Britons who are obviously British. Idris Elba is getting a knighthood, right? Yeah. And that's actually quite a weak argument against it. That's not contesting the kind of idea that sits below this. And what we really need is probably for progressives and liberals or whoever kind of claims to be on the left to make an argument about equality. If ethno-nationalism is starting to become a defining characteristic of the right, which it is, then equality has to return as a distinguishing feature of the left. And that's what the paper and the research is really about.
If we leave aside then ethnicity, birthplace and ancestry and focus on shared values, which, as the poll points out, a majority of Brits still do believe that that is where being British is rooted in, i.e. those shared values. I mean, if we take the case of the story that's in the news at the moment, Alaa Abd El Fattah, I mean, people would argue that he clearly doesn't have shared values.
Yeah. I think this is a really interesting case, and we're kind of a way in which to think about this question about identity and belonging to the nation. I think you're on hard territory when you sort of say, well, actually, to be a member of this political community, to be a member of the national community, you need to have a very strict set of values. That history tells us leads us down to some quite dark places. So I'm not sure we should be sort of saying, well, to be British, you have to have a certain group of sort of liberal nationalist values. I think that's not right. I think we probably mean something else. You probably mean a sense of, okay, well, actually, we believe in law. Law is good, and everyone should be equal under the law. We believe that we should look after our children, and we should look after our parents. And that, broadly speaking, we want the best for our parents. Those are the kind of values and a set of norms that we want to support an institution. We broadly believe in school.
Oh. I think we might have lost Dr. Patel there. I don't know if you can still hear me, Dr. Patel. Are you there? No, we've lost
you. Sorry.
The line.
Did I lose you?
Yeah, we lost you just at the end there. Sorry. If you could just finish there lastly on what being British means to you, those sort of expand on those values that you were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, to me specifically, it means about being a member of a collective. That being part of Britain is that the kind of the sum is more than kind of, or the whole is greater than the sum of the individual parts. It's having a sense of identity within myself, but also within the people around me, including the people I don't know, the people who live within the islands of Britain, having a sense of solidarity with each of them and sort of saying, okay, well, together we're stronger and power is what happens between us, and we can get in together and sort of pay a bunch of taxes so that we can send our kids to school for free and we can access healthcare when we need to, and so on. Or we're going to set a set of rules that define the law, and everyone should follow those laws because we think those are equal. And when we want to change the laws, we can do that together. So we have a degree of agency as a collective. And ultimately, I guess, being British to me is about having some capacity in our, or some faith in our capacity to shape what lies ahead, and sort of remembering that the future is the outcome of our own collective endeavour.
Thank you for your time. Dr. Parth Patel is Associate Director at the Institute for Public Policy Research, who conducted this research. To Inaya Florian Imam, who is founder of the Equiano Project, a freedom of speech-focused think tank. What does being British mean to you, Inaya? Good morning.
Morning. So being British means to me a deep sense of loyalty and affinity to the past, and the peoples and the future of this Isles. And I think sometimes I worry about the kind of British values rhetoric. I understand that it's trying to foster something a bit more coherent. But when we talk about tolerance and rule of law and democracy and freedom, these are no doubt deeply important. But I wouldn't say that if you're, I don't know, a communist, that means that you can't be British because you don't necessarily believe in, you know, parliamentary democracy in a very kind of specific sense. And also a lot of those values in many ways are Western values, that you can find those values in Denmark or America. And therefore it doesn't necessarily feel that specific to our society. And I think part of that is why we're seeing the rise of ethno-nationalism. No doubt there are just some that are deeply cynical and want to make the position of ethnic minorities in British society contingent and are motivated by racist, hateful means. But I think some feel that they're seeing their society change rapidly and they're looking for something substantive, something more rooted to belong to. And in the absence of that in our current society, people then can retreat into things like ethnicity. And I think the other end, which is just anyone can be British, it's all about just what wishy-washy values you subscribe to. I think that doesn't give people the sense of satisfaction about the deep sense of relationships they want with other people in their society.
So can anyone become British, in your view, if they subscribe to the sort of criteria that you outline there?
I think it is possible. I think it is possible for anyone, but it's not just, I don't think it's just a piece of paper. And I think in the previous conversation, you mentioned the gentleman, Alaa Abdel Fattah. He has an extremely tenuous link to Britishness, to such an extent where he didn't really feel the need to acquire Britishness until he was in prison and was looking for a way to get out in 2021.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, they see that and think that this person intuitively just isn't, they're not like you and me. They're not like people that have contributed, that love this country, that love the people and have a deep investment in the past and the future. And I think when we see individuals like that, who obviously see Britishness as solely a transaction, as a way, a completely convenient endeavor, I think that really waters down Britishness and give space for those that try and argue something that we might oppose, but might give it a more hard edges. And I think that's the challenge for politicians, that maybe we do need to think a bit more exclusionary. And I think it is uncomfortable and I think it is difficult. And I think to some extent that may be the way that we respond to those that have very hateful intentions, because there is a truth to the fact that Britishness should be a bit more exclusionary.
Thank you for your time. Inaya Florian Imam is founder of the Equiano Project, a freedom of speech focused think tank. What does being British mean to you? Is it a case of shared values, as a majority of people in this poll agree or think? And, I mean, are you concerned by this huge rise? Dr. Parth Patel, who spoke with us earlier on, certainly concerned by what he sees as a rise of ethno-nationalism in Britain, and this idea that the number of people who believe Britishness is something you are born with has almost doubled in 2 years. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Plus, it's not a Formula One car. That is the sound of a drone, as we learn many new drone users must take a theory test before flying outside. Imagine having that buzzing outside your window. It'd be an absolute nightmare. What are those new rules? What is in the theory test? We'll find out from the Civil Aviation Authority. Next, 9:17 the time, the news with Amelia Cox.
Torvald and Dean, Idris Elba and England's winning women's football and rugby teams have all been recognised in the New Year's Honours list. Two members of Anthony Joshua's team were killed in a crash which also saw the boxer injured in Nigeria yesterday. And the Cabinet Office has been accused of a cover-up after withholding documents referring to Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor from the National Archives. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic is being held on the M25 anti-clockwise just before junction 21A at the A405. It's because a lorry is on fire and there are delays on the approach. Very busy on the West Cross route going southbound to the Holland Park roundabout, and that's because of an accident. And in Woolwich, Sandy Hill Road remains closed northbound because a car was on fire earlier. On the train, South Eastern aren't going to and from Victoria again today. Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services aren't going to and from Liverpool Street for engineering works, and also Weaver Line trains can't go into and from that station. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line after a signal failure.
This is LBC.
At Morrison's, mix and match on three packs of the best party food and get one free. Serve up fancy New Year's Eve nibbles like lobster and prawn mac and cheese bites, prawn coconut curry donuts, and then do your croquettes with tomato chilli jam.
Morrison's, to shop at Morrison's.
Majority of stores and online. Prices may vary at Morrison's daily. 176 to 304 grams. £6 each. Offer ends 31st of December.
This is LBC. This is LBC with Henry Riley. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Okay, 9:17 is the time. Henry Riley with you here on LBC. This from Grant says, saying you can only be British if you're born in Britain is a definition of national identity based on place of birth. It doesn't refer to ethnicity, ancestry or appearance. People who aren't born in Britain can still live here, contribute, belong to society and hold citizenship with full legal rights. Defining British by birth doesn't deny any of that. It simply separates legal status from identity. It's honestly unbelievable, but the birth-based definition like this gets labelled as racist when it makes no reference to race at all. Disagreeing with the definition is fair, but mislabelling it shuts down proper discussion. Says Grant, thank you. Robin Aberdeen says, I find this whole issue of Britishness yet another way of dividing us further. There is a legal definition of citizenship, which is purely where you are born. Anything else is pure opinion and an individual expression of your own identity. Anything else is just welcoming divides and drawing lines in the sand where they don't need to be. This, I'll remind you, story on the front page of The Guardian. The number of people who believe that Britishness is something you are born with has almost doubled in 2 years. I mean, do you think that? Do you think it has to be something you're born with? I would fundamentally disagree with that. I do think it comes down to shared values. And actually, as Anaya said earlier on, our contributor, about having a link and a sort of loyalty to the country as well. But it is a subject that's open for debate, and I'm keen to hear your view. Phil is in Penrith. Hello, Phil.
Good morning, Henry.
Morning, sir.
Englishness, is it, or Britishness? Which one is it?
Well, we can do Englishness another time. We're doing Britishness at the moment.
Well, there seems to be a trend in this country at the moment that a unifying factor is that people like cheap beer in pubs that don't allow music.
Right. Yeah, I probably subscribe to that, yes.
Well, in that case, I think you're rubbish.
Go on.
I think you're abandoning the past. People accept the future. They're forgetting the past for the convenience of the future. A lot of people don't care about the past, do they?
Right. Where are you going with this, though? What do you mean?
Well, it's actually what makes up your fabric as a person. Your history, your knowledge of your history, your culture. We haven't got a lot of culture left, have we?
We're a multicultural society, aren't we?
Well, you're talking about ethnicity there, aren't you?
To some extent, yes. We're talking about cultures.
I'm talking
primarily.
About history. I'm talking about the things that have happened in the past.
But of course, if you look through history,
bound us together.
But if you look through history, Phil, our culture hasn't remained the same. It has chopped and changed with the times, depending on immigration, for example.
Yeah, yeah. And if you go back and look at that, you can see a lot of the stuff that we've abandoned. We're abandoning stuff. We're forgetting the people who made this country, the people who worked in the cotton mills and the steel mills for a pittance. They don't get any recognition. Nobody cares. Everybody's. It's a very much grab what you can and hang on to in society now.
If you are not born in Britain, can you become British?
Yes, yes. I think a lot of the people from Europe in the 1940s or the Jewish people they here made wonderful contributions, didn't they? And they've become wonderful part of our culture.
So from that logic, you can come from anywhere, and providing you align with values, for example, shared values, you can become British.
So long as your cultures don't stand on the toes of the past, yes.
And what of British people who are born here, who you may disagree with their cultures?
Oh, I love a good disagreement, don't we? You have one every morning on this radio, well, a good disagreement.
Well, that's true. And normally with you, Phil, it's nice to have you on. Thank you. Phil there in Penrith. Scott in West Hampstead, coming to you in a moment. I want your view on something else. And look, I need to confess as well, we'll come back to the idea of Britishness in a moment. It's not something I'm completely au fait with, because I don't have one, nor do I want one. But nonetheless, many new drone users have been urged to take a theory test, or they need to, I should say, before flying outside. Many in the UK, and by the way, you might have got a drone this Christmas, I would imagine, may face a rude awakening when they will still have to take a theory test before being allowed to fly outdoors. In just 2 days' time, from the 1st of January, those intending to fly drones or model aircraft weighing 100 grams... 100 grams is not very much, is it? Weighing 100 grams or more outside must complete a Civil Aviation Authority online theory test to get a flyer ID, something previously only needed for heavier drones. The regulator believes up to 500,000 people in the UK may be impacted by its new requirements. Jonathan Nicholson is head of special projects at the Civil Aviation Authority. What will the consequence be then if someone flouts this guidance from the 1st of January? Good morning, Jonathan.
Hi, good morning. Well, it is the law. So like any other law, you can get into serious trouble if you don't comply with it. So the police can ask to see proof that you've got one if you're flying a drone. So if you haven't, then you could be fined. And ultimately, if you're doing something much more serious with a drone and you're found guilty, you could go to prison. But really, part of this is trying to give people more confidence about flying drones and giving them the knowledge to know what they can do, where they can do it, so they actually go out and enjoy what product they've got.
So in drones that people have got for Christmas, so for example, sort of, can I use the expression toy drones or something? But what are they? Do they then have to do this theory test?
So it's anything above 100 grams, which is, it's a reasonable weight. So the things that might you've got for Christmas for a few pounds, 30, 40 pounds that you fly indoors, they don't count. So anything you only use indoors, don't worry about that. Crack on. This is really slightly larger drones being used outside. We've seen a sort of real increase in the under 250 gram drone market because they've become much more capable and are really amazing quality drones in that sector now. So they are smaller, they're safer, but people still need to fly them safely and follow the rules. And the education piece tells them everything they need to know, including other stuff like protecting people's privacy as well, which is, I know, is a concern for people.
I read that the air ambulance in some cases has complained about drones impacting them or getting in the way. Why do you think this change is necessary? How dangerous can it be without this this new change in the law?
So even the smaller drones can absolutely impact and have an issue on other types of aviation. If you think about everything from a parachutist, a paraglider, and as you rightly say, the air ambulances quite often encounter drones when they're out on a job trying to save somebody's life, either next to a road or even in sort of cities and towns. They can't fly if there's drones around and nearby. So part of the education is really trying to say to people, people, just be sensible, don't fly your drone where it doesn't make sense, and giving them the guidelines and the rules to be able to do that.
Many people who are sort of wanting to get a drone and enthusiasts will already have a drone. So do they not have to do this new test?
So if their drone's over 250 grams, they will have already had to do it.
Right.
But there's a huge portion of the market that haven't had to because their drones are smaller. We're now asking them to come to our website, caa.co.uk/drones, and get this flyer ID. It's free. It's all online. It won't take them long to do. And as I say, part of it, when we talk to drone users, they're worried about what they can do and what they can't do. This will actually give them more confidence to be able to precisely know what they can do.
And is this, so if I want to fly a drone above 100 grams in my living room, that's fine, but if it then goes outside the kitchen door and into my balcony or garden or whatever, then I'm technically breaking the law if I haven't done my theory test.
Yeah. If flying outside is the real key, because that's when you start to, you know, encounter other things that fly, people, vehicles, etc., things you're interacting with more than, obviously, you're not inside your house.
And what's the rule, if you do get this theory test, what's the rule with where you can fly it? I mean, could I fly it over your home, for example, or into your garden, Jonathan?
Yeah, if you've got a smaller drone, one of the ones we're talking about that are now caught by the flyer ID requirement, absolutely, you can fly those in urban areas, you can fly them over people. That's why we also include information on privacy and data protection as well, so people can really be aware of what the responsibilities are on them. And the drone rules on that are absolutely no different to if you walked around with a camera with a telephoto lens or have a CCTV camera. It's the same rules.
But people might find that still tricky, that you can have sort of drones flying over your house when you don't necessarily want that, or?
Yeah, but as I say, part of this is educating the users of the drones so they know how to and what not to do if they are flying near people and over people, how to respect their privacy, what the laws are on that area in the UK. So, yeah, they should be abiding by that and not filming somebody unnecessarily.
And the rules in city, it's still not allowed in cities at all, so I couldn't sort of fly my drone over Parliament or Big Ben.
So the smaller drones you can fly in urban areas, but people, again, part of the training they get explained to them is there are airspace restrictions. So there are places, quite rightly, where you can't fly any type of drone. There's restrictions around airfields and airports, obviously. Some of those you can fly if you get permission, but the test and the training talks to people about those restrictions, what they mean, where they can and can't fly. But smaller drones have a lot more freedom because they're smaller and safer.
I've learnt a lot. Thank you for your time. Jonathan Nicholson is Head of Special Projects at the Civil Aviation Authority. Are you a drone user? Will you be impacted by this? Maybe you got one at Christmas. It seems to me pretty sensible that you have to do a theory test, but if you do disagree with it and you are a drone enthusiast, I would very much like to hear from you. And have you been impacted by someone flying a drone near your house or your flat or where you live? I haven't, but I wonder if it's happened to you. 0345 6060 973. First though, at 9:30, let's get the news headlines with Amelia Cox.
England's winning women's football and rugby teams are among those named on the New Year's honours list. Lionesses manager Serena Wiegmann has also been awarded an honorary damehood, while Idris Elba has been knighted. Two of Anthony Joshua's close friends and team were killed in a crash in Nigeria, which left the boxer injured. Senegami and Latif Ayodele were killed when the vehicle they were travelling in hit a stationary truck. And official papers about Andrew Mountbatten Windsor have been withheld from the National Archives. The Cabinet Office says files about his travel plans were never meant for release. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing. A few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped
for the sports media industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Niam, a sports media student in Year 12.
During class, I've edited football videos for socials, reported on games, and even produced my own highlight packages. Working directly with the industry makes me excited for my future career in sports broadcasting.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his nine lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
New In, the latest custom-fit rechargeable hearing devices. Discreet, comfortable and smart enough to help you catch every moment. Book a free hearing test at bootshearingcare.com. T's and C's apply.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Robert says the questions and answers for the drone test are available online. Are they? Well, let's have a look at that. Sue says, I've no problem with pubs which don't play music. Means I can order my cheap booze without a megaphone. That is one of the advantages. Oh, some pubs you can do it on an app, which is very handy as well. When that first came in, I thought, that's never going to catch on. Shows how much I know. When he started the table service on, might as well say, everyone knows Wetherspoons, they do it and a few others. I was thinking, how lazy are people who use the app? And now I'm virtually frightened to go up to the bar. I never do it on the app. It's so much easier. We're talking about what being British means, whether it is a love and respect for the country. Is that enough? Is it to do with integration or to do with sort of getting involved in your community? 0345 6060973. Seems to me that you can, I do sort of understand it, but I don't think it's right that there's a sort of link with lineage. I mean, that does give you, I suppose, that link and that love for a country in a lot of cases, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases. But nonetheless, there are a lot of people who have come to this country, immigrants who've come to this country, who would seem to me to be more British than those who are born here. But anyway, keen for your view. 0345 6060973. Let's talk drones, though. Nicola's in Glossop. Hello, Nicola.
Morning, Henry.
Have you got one?
No, I haven't. Oh. I'd like to shoot every single one of them out of the sky.
Wow. Okay.
So we have a problem. Right, so we farm, and quite often on our farm, this last year or so, we've done quite a bit of filming.
What do you farm?
Sheep, cattle, and horses.
Okay.
So what happens when a TV crew come out to film on us, quite often it's moorland. It's very difficult to get things up, and we're within Greater Manchester airspace, so flying a helicopter isn't always the most cost-effective, environmental, or gets the best shots. So they use drones. And the drones right. that they use, when they're doing scenes with horses, and they've done quite a few, we've done some period dramas and things, and they've used horses, the horses have to be drone-trained. Because otherwise, the horse, all it hears is...
How do you get a horse drone-trained?
Well, they just practice with it until they're totally desensitised to it. So the right. stuntman and the stunt teams that come out, because they're all horses that are obviously, you know, able to have some idiot actor on that can't ride, and the horses have to be very quiet and good at what they do. I mean, some of these horses are trying to play dead while a drone is flying around them. They cannot move. That's what the scene demands. That's what the scene demands. So these horses are drone trained. The problem that you have is that my own horses aren't drone trained. They pretty much are now, but they're not drone trained. And people who are riding out on country lanes and riding in fields and, you know, round some park and places like that that have got big cross-country courses that you can hire, people then stick up drones to fly and see what's going on, and all these other horses just cart off with you. You know, they don't know what's happening. They see it as an insect. They yeah. just literally hear the buzzing, relate it with a hornet or a wasp that's going to sting them, because the buzzing is
it is like, yeah, it's like a
and
sort of...
You can't rationalise with half a ton of horse that's losing its mind and say, no, it's a drone, it's not going to touch you, it's 300 foot above you, because it's already gone. Do you know what I mean? And that my friend was leading out her child on a lead rein pony last year, and a drone came up over the lane. It was actually filming for some property details, so it was a professional filming. It was quite a big drone.
Yeah.
So they could see the drone, they could see what was going on, but the guy was so busy filming the house and the site that he couldn't see that this pony's carting off with a small three-year-old child on it, and that one was wobbly and led. So, and you can't get to the guy yourself and say, put your drone down while I just walk past.
But you can't trace him, yeah. Or you can. Hello? Oh, Nicola, hello? Can we get a line to Glossop? Hello, sorry, we lost you there. Sorry, what you were saying. We lost the line.
You don't know where it is. So if you've got an unruly dog, you see the person.
Yes.
And say, can you put your dog on a lead? And most people will, you know, abide straight away and go, oh my God, yeah, I don't want you to fall off and break your neck. Because I'll be liable. The drone pilot, A, doesn't know, and B, you can't tell him anyway, because you've no idea where he is. He could be half a mile away.
Do you think they should be able to film your horses up close in the first place?
Sorry?
Should they be able to film your horses up close in the first place?
Absolutely not. And I definitely don't want them flying over my land when they then upset my animals and they run through a fence.
I've got
a $2,000 vet bill on a Sunday and a horse with a leg like a banana skin, and I've got nobody to pin it on and say it was you with your drone.
Yeah.
People are doing it deliberately. They think it's funny. Well, look, we filmed these horses galloping around. Yeah. It's like, no, absolutely not. Because you're not picking up the vet bill. And yet, if it was a dog worrying these animals, I'd be able to nail them now.
Okay. Thank you, Nicola. John is from Nuneaton, or is in Nuneaton. I don't know where he's from. But has been flying a drone. Hello, John.
Hello, Henry.
You haven't been filming the horses in Glossop, have you?
No, it wasn't me. Good. It's good. Okay.
Right.
But that is an issue. I've been flying for about 4 or 5 years now. And it's, in fact, recently, a couple of years ago, they eased the restrictions, funnily enough, so you can fly small drones. I have a small one. It's only less than 250 grams.
Oh.
And it has a camera on it. And I've got a YouTube channel. So I'm flying the drone around and featuring, you know, odds and ends around where I live, which are of interest. But it's the rules are very important. And the one about horses, yeah, I've come across that immediately because there was a restricted area I was at. I rang somebody up, which you were advised to do, and he said, yes, horses and cattle are very sensitive to the sounds, as just the lady just said. And yes, so you've got to be very, very careful keeping away from those. Likewise, a lot of areas I fly are where people walk dogs. So whenever I'm bringing the drone down or taking it off, I make sure it's well out of the way of dogs because they don't quite understand what's going on as well. And if they were to jump up and catch a drone, which has got 8 little propellers whizzing round, they could seriously hurt themselves. But so you've got to be very careful on that as well.
If your drone is below 250 grams then, so you haven't had to do any test?
No. Funny enough, I did do one because I felt it was a good idea to do it.
Right.
And I did a similar test when I took the drone to America. And it's very useful because it gives you the information what you should or shouldn't do. The other thing I did, by the way, when the restrictions were eased, it meant then I could fly outside my house and fly in my neighbourhood. So what I did do, I printed off a little leaflet and handed it to all my immediate neighbours and said, look, I've got a drone. I'm going to fly it around and about. I hope you don't mind. I'm not prying on anybody. You just got to be very, very careful and sensible. And I put my own phone number on. And in fact, I got replies back, very positive. Say, oh, that's great. We'd love to see what everywhere looks like.
Really?
Well, the other thing is, of course, you can fly over most places. I mean, some of you are strict. You can't fly over prisons or palaces and crowds and stuff like that. But you can fly over anything else, really. But you can't take off from them, which is a curious point of view. So you can take off from outside a place, fly over it, just as you might fly over with an aeroplane, really, to be honest. There is no different to that.
Yeah.
Also, of course, it's easy to say, well, look, I can see everything I can see from the drone, but just going on Google Earth, I can look into your back garden at any time. It doesn't make any difference. So don't get worried about it. I'm not prying anyway, and I don't want to pry. You just got to be very careful and cautious and be aware of sensibilities with people around and about. In fact, in all the time I've flown, if anybody's come up to me and to see what I'm doing, they've always just been curious. Yeah. And I said, yeah, look what I can see. It's fantastic.
Nervously curious, though, because I would be thinking, I mean, if you're flying in my place, I'd be going, hello, can I help you? What? Why are you here? What are you filming?
Yeah, well, yeah, if I was flying it down low by somebody's windows or something, yes, but, you know, that'd be just silly to... And some people do that. They do it for the excitement of it and to get more clicks on their YouTube channels. They do silly things like that, and I find that extremely annoying that they do that, and they know that they're causing a ruptures, and they know they can get some reaction from people, and that is the worst thing ever that can happen with them. They shoot him.
Okay. The great drone debate. Thank you, John. Appreciate it, who has a drone, and Nicola, who's irritated by drone. You may, if you do have views on drones, if you're a drone operator or you, again, have been impacted like Nicola, I want to hear your view before the end of the programme. 0345 6060 973 is the number of call, to call. If you got, if you are impacted, maybe you got one at Christmas or you now are planning to get a drone and you have to do this. So it seems to be pretty sensible. I don't really understand why people would be against this test, but it seems that some are. So keen to hear your view on that. Chandra's in Newcastle on the subject of Britishness. Hello, Chandra.
Very good morning, Henry. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
I've got a convoluted point to make. Please bear with
good.
Me.
That's all right.
I was not born in this country, and I'm fully aware and I'm appreciative of the fact that thousands of years of history and cultural evolution has happened before I got here. And there is no practical way for me to fully learn and appreciate and become part of where Britain is. But there are aspects of Britishness. The very fact that I'm able to call you and probably disagree with you without and part ways with you in a civilized manner, that to me is Britishness. And I'm grateful that I've there are other cultures, the culture I come from, where this is possible. But because it's there elsewhere, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist here. It's aspect of Britishness. For example, audience clap when opposition hit a boundary in cricket, and that is Britishness. The ability to appreciate the person next to us qualities and appreciable qualities, that to me is Britishness, and that I hold very dearly, and I'm grateful that I've been able to recognize that. If ethno-nationalists don't see me as British, fair enough, I can understand that. But what they cannot take away from me is the bits that I've changed in myself in order to try and belong here. That they cannot take away from me. I might, in their eyes, I will never be British. I don't look white. I don't sound British. But I have made conscious efforts to try and belong on this land, and I've not forcefully done it. I've done it because I've changed bits about myself and replaced them with things which are wonderful about this country. So this is a beautiful land. It has complicated history, especially given the fact that its relationship with my land of birth is a complex one and never fully addressed one. But regardless of the history, this is still a beautiful country with a phenomenal contribution to the modern world. And I'm respectful of that. And I've changed bits about myself to try and belong here. And that, to me, is assimilating Britishness. And I mean, the right of the country or the right wing of the British politics can never see and value where I am with it. But that's okay. But their views may or may not matter. But the point is that I think we all can become, even someone like myself can become partly British. And that's inevitable. That's absolutely inevitable. And nobody can, I mean, someone can be stupid and disregard that claim. But just because they disagree, they're not right. Anybody who moves here can partly become British.
Yeah,
Well, I think, to be honest, I don't even need to say anything. I think it's a brilliant call, and a lot of the messages coming in, totally agreeing. Tony saying, wonderful caller. This from Mike saying, Martin says, what a great fella. Chandra, I agree with an awful lot of that. So thank you very much in Newcastle. More calls on Britishness in just a moment, and also your views on the great drone debate. It's 9:47. The news is with Amelia Cox.
Idris Elba, Torval and Dean, and co-host of Global's podcast, The Sports Agents, Gabby Logan, have all been named on the New Year's honours list. Anthony Joshua's promoter has confirmed the death of two of his close friends and team in a crash in Nigeria. And the Cabinet Office insists files referring to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, withheld from the National Archives, were never intended for release. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing, a few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M25 is now closed anti-clockwise between junctions 22 at London Coney and 21A at the A405. It's because a lorry was on fire. Very busy on the West Cross route, heading southbound in Shepherd's Bush down to the Holland Park roundabout. And that's all down to an accident where two lanes are closed. On the trains, well, Greater Anglia and Stansted Express services aren't going to and from Liverpool Street again today. Some services can go from Stratford, and also the Weaver line can't go to and from Liverpool Street, so they're starting and terminating at London Fields instead. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line, and that was after a signal failure from earlier.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, Ian Dale.
At 12, what does it mean to be British? At 11, how many of our current party leaders will still be leader at the end of 2026? But first, your nominations for the LBC New Year's Honours List.
Ian Dale at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices Quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
Thinking about goals this time of year? Like saving money or buying a new car? Well, right now you can save £3,750 on the all-electric Mini Countryman with the electric car grant. Yep, two goals in one, and you get more space, more adventure, more Mini than ever. I feel a cheeky little smile coming on. Start living the big life for less and save £3,750 with the electric car grant. Visit mini.co.uk/grant. Grant available for specifications up to £42,000. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Message Henry Reilly on WhatsApp now. 0345 6060973.
10 to 10 the time. Scott's in West Hampstead. Great show, Scott.
No, it's not a great show. I'm not using these words anymore.
Okay, good.
It's an absolutely fantastic show.
There we go. It's always the same line from Scott. We've changed it up just as the year is ending.
Is the check in the post, yeah?
Good. Yes, check is in the post. Thank you for all the kind words. Let's hope management are hearing. Scott, what did you want to tell me about Britishness?
You know, your last call from Chandra, what a marvellous call. Really, it nearly moved me to tears. Absolutely brilliant, you know. Absolutely fantastic. I define myself in different ways. I was born in Scotland. I actually call myself British by birth. But I also have, I also define myself in terms of heritage, because I had a Danish grandfather who was an immigrant between the wars, and he married an English woman, and then they all came up to Scotland, and my late father married a Scots woman. So I've got two Scottish grandparents, and my late, well, they're all late, of course, you know, all of them. But so I see myself as partly Scottish, partly Danish, and partly English, and I'm very proud of those roots. But I also define myself in other ways. I mean, I've lived in West Hampstead for 32 years, so I guess I could call myself a West Hampsteadorian. I'm not sure what the word is
yes.
for Hampsteadorian. But I think identity, I think it's, you know, there's multiple sort of aspects to it. And what really worries me, this survey you mentioned about the rise in people defining themselves in ethno-nationalist ways, I don't feel comfortable about that at all. And it worries me. And the rhetoric, the anti-immigrant rhetoric that I hear, you know, more and more read in the newspapers and hear on the radio and people demonizing immigrants, it's a horrible, horrible thing. I don't like it. I see it in America happening under the Trump administration. I don't like it.
What is best done to stop it then? Is it a case of better integration? I know we all sort of want better integration, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But is that
do.
Not the solution?
No, I think the solution is a message from all politicians, and I know there are different messages coming from different parties, you know, all the way, you know, and I think it's for the politicians to actually emphasize and get the message over to people that there's more that unites us than divides us. We've got more in common, you know, across cultures. I'm proud to live in a multicultural community, and particularly London, although I'm moving out after 50 odd years of living in London, I'm moving to the coast, but that's for different reasons. Yeah, but I'll still be ringing LBC, of course.
can we still say you're in West Hampstead? It won't be the same Scott.
No, it'll be Scott and Worthing.
Oh, okay.
Scott and Worthing. But
I don't like it. Hasn't got the same ring to it.
Scott of late West Hampstead.
Late West Hampstead. Let's do
but
that.
Not the late Scott, because I'm not hoping to know that just yet.
Well, let's hope not. You're the best caller, Scott, for goodness sake. Thank you in West Hampstead. Appreciated for now, until he moves to Worthing. More messages coming in. This on a different subject, but I did want to reflect it. Andy says, can you pass on my congratulations to Clive Tilsley for his OBE? My late wife was Clive's wife's bestie. And the last picture I have is of Clive and my wife, Jenny, at the Bobby Moore fundraiser 15 years ago, which was 2 months before she passed away with colon cancer. So says Andy, and we will pass it on to Clive, of course. Back to Britishness. Jason says, the whole Britishness debate really annoys and alienates me. I'm not British, I'm Scottish. I was born in Scotland, lived here and paid my taxes here my whole life and can trace my ancestry back over 100 years. Britain and Britishness, to me, are a pseudonym for English and Englishness. I feel absolutely no affinity or connection with any of it, and I cringe and balk at most of it, including the entitled, exploitative royalty, aristocracy, and simply moronic class system obsession. Thank you, Jason. And Alex says, on drone, we're doing all three. Drones, the noise of a drone is also fast becoming a sound that many people disagree with. It is irritating. We played a clip earlier on of the drone sort of flying nearby, and it is irritating. There's a lot of people who clearly have a strong view on drones, though. This from Anne says, I'm thinking of getting one on my property for checking my roof. I'm against the use of it being intrusive to people. I certainly don't want to upset anyone. We need laws, but I'd like to check my roof. Okay, well, I'm sure there are other ways of doing that rather than just a drone. Tess says, most drones above 250 grams will be a couple of £1,000, not people getting them for Christmas. Oh, Tess, I said over 100 grams. 250 grams is the existing, but if you get a new drone over 100, then you do need to get a test. Also says, Henry, you're against the law. It's not all drones, it's above a particular size. Yeah, well, you've got the size wrong there, Tess, so there we go. Kylie says, we need common sense. Someone was recently flying a drone over a playground at a children's nursery that I work in. Would they stand at the gate and stare in the same way? Doubt it. It screams weird. That is weird. Why on earth are they not allowed over certain historic buildings, but they're allowed over playgrounds? Surely that's not the case. Neil's in Haywards Heath. Hello, Neil.
Good morning.
Are you talking drones or Britishness? Or both?
Britishness, sir.
Okay,
Britishness.
Great. Go on.
Well, look, this for me is the best country on earth. I love its culture, its values, democracy. I don't know, the rule of law, the tolerance. And it's just a sense of belonging here. I do sense, however, in recent years, that is becoming eroded. But I go back to your previous but one caller.
Chandra.
He was an immigrant to this country. That's right. But what I tell you, well, what a great fellow. He's true British. And I tell you what, for me, he's welcomed, as are other people like him. He's bringing pride back into this country, and that's what we need.
Yeah, I could not agree more. It was a very good sort of illustration of it, wasn't it? Someone who clearly holds British values, more British values than dare I say, some people who were born here, Brits who were born here.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed his comments. If he's listening, well done. You should be very proud of yourself. It was a pleasure to hear.
And what does it mean to you, lastly, Neil, being British? Could you sort of depict it as a few sets of values, or what does it mean to you personally?
I've had the pleasure of living all over the world. I'm a businessman. We've got a number of small businesses. We employ a lot of people. I'm just seeing our values being eroded. I love everything about Britain, apart from the weather. It's just the best place to be. It's free. It's tolerant. You can pretty much do what you want to do. There's no better place in than the world to open a business in this country. No better place.
Okay.
I left school when I was 16 with nothing. I joined the military. They invested me. I left a while late and started my own businesses, and we've done very well out of it. And for that, I'm terribly thankful for this country and what it's done for me.
Thank you, Neil, for putting it so succinctly. Neil there in Hayward Heath. Finish off Linda on drones, who says, I have a remote control car. Grandson's got a motor race car. We don't use them on roads or motorways, as we are not allowed to. So why are drones allowed in the air in the same places? Should road and air restrictions not be the same, says Linda and Berry? I don't think it's the last time we'll talk about drones. I was interested in that. If you miss any of today's show, you have a drone.
Yeah.
Ian Dale has a drone. Breaking news.
I got it as a Christmas present about 15 years ago when they first came out, and I was so frightened of it, I didn't take it out of the box. And when I did take it out of the box, I flew it for about 20 minutes and then put it straight back in the box, and it's never appeared since.
Well, are you going to take it out now we've got these new restrictions?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, Ian Dale has got a drone to sell you if you're interested. if you miss any of the show, you can listen back on Catch Up and the LBC app. You can download it for free from your app store now. At one is Sheila Fogarty, but right now, as I say, he's got a drone to sell you. It's Ian Dale.
Thank you very much, Henry. Well, the release of the New Year's Honours List is always a good talking point, and this year is no different. But what is the point of the honours system? Has it grown into disrepute over the years? And it's also now your chance to nominate someone for our very own LBC New Year's Honours List. Henry Riley, OBE. Maybe MBE. At 11, both Keir Starmer and Kemi Badenoch are 7-4 on to be replaced as party leaders in 2026. Which party leaders will still be leader next December and why? And at 12, a new report out today says that a third of us believe you can't be British if you're not born in the UK. Surely that's ridiculous. But what does being British actually mean? Is it based on ancestry, residence, values or heritage? Or all four?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, figure skaters Jane Torval and Christopher Dean say they're thrilled to be recognised on the New Year's Honours List. Actor Idris Elba has been knighted and Lionesses manager Serena Wiegman has been made an honorary dame. Teacher, author and broadcaster Bobby Seagull, best known for his appearance on University Challenge, has received an MBE. He's told LBC how he broke the news to his family.
I was thinking, can I put this on my family WhatsApp group? But I thought, like, this deserves more than just a thumbs up or smiley face emoji. So I saw my family one by one, or in little groups, in person, and I gave them the letter. And I said, oh, I think I've got jury duty. And they were like, oh, that's really fascinating. And then they took the letter and they opened it up. And my dad, bless him, I think I saw a tear in his eye.
Anthony Joshua has remained in hospital overnight following a crash in Nigeria which killed two members of his team. Sinar Gami and Latif Ayodele died when the jeep they were travelling in crashed into a stationary truck. Senior reporter at the Daily Mail, Nick Pisa, shared more details with LBC.
Their two is very best friends, actually. He's been with them for years. They're trainers with him, both British nationals. In fact, Sinar
owns a gym in the Harrow area of London called Evolve, which have put out a statement overnight on social media saying that they are going to be closed today as they mourn the passing of their owner.
Police have ended their investigation into the disappearance of a Royal Navy sailor almost 40 years ago. Simon Parkes was last seen in December 1986 when the ship he was serving on was docked in Gibraltar. His disappearance has previously been part of an investigation into a man who murdered two men also serving on board at the same time. The Foreign Secretary has ordered an urgent review into the case of Ala Abdel Fattah over the emergence of social media posts. The activist appeared to call for violence against Zionists and the police. He has since apologised, but there are calls for his British citizenship, which was granted in 2021, to be revoked. And a union says thousands of its female members feel unsafe and embarrassed because they're forced to wear PPE designed for men. A survey by GMB found a fifth claimed they couldn't do their job as a result. Problems included gloves becoming caught in machinery and respirators that don't seal properly. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 18 points at 98.85. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloud clearing in the south and east with brighter spells developing. A few showers along southern and eastern coasts, highs of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 3 minutes past ten on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until one. I want to start talking about the New Year's Honours List because I'm the kind of geek that really used to get quite excited about the New Year's Honours List or the Queen, as it then was, Queen's Birthday Honours List in June. Not so much nowadays, though, because I think the honours system has become rather devalued over the years. And that people are being honoured now at a point in their career where they're nowhere near the end of their career. Surely the honours system should honour people who have achieved an awful lot in whatever line of work they're doing. It's not just about celebrities. It's not just about politicians. It's not just about sports people. It has become more and more about acknowledging the work that individual people do in their communities. And that's a good thing. But I looked through this year's list and there are quite a few people who I would say are in the middle of their careers. And you think, well, why would you honour somebody in the middle of the... It's like when a football team does well. I mean, England obviously haven't won anything in the, certainly in the men's football in recent years. But I never quite understood why everyone was clamouring for David Beckham to get an honour and then get a knighthood. Now, he's done a lot of charitable work, so I suppose he's got it in part for that. But then you look at the England women's football team, and they have been acknowledged in the honours list, but only Serena Wiegmann, the manager, and a couple of the players. And you think, well, what about the others? What about Chloe Kelly, the woman who actually scored the goal to win the European Championship? And you just think, well, why are some acknowledged and others not? And it was the same with the England Men's World Cup winning team in 1966. You'd have thought that all of them should have deserved some sort of honour, whether it's an MBE, OBE, CBE. In a sense, it doesn't really matter the level of the honour. But it took ages for some of them to get an honour, and that's surely wrong. So I want to hear your views on the honour system in general. Do you think that it needs to be reformed? But also, I want to ask you this. Who would you nominate for an honour? If we had an LBC New Year's Honours List, who do you think should be on it? And I'm not talking about LBC presenters. I'm talking about people that either in the wider world that you really respect and you think they deserve an honour, or people in your local community. Maybe a friend that you know who's just gone that extra mile but gets scant little recognition for it. And you think, well, this person ought to have an honour in the normal honours list. But it's just reserved for the likes of... And I make no sort of comment on whether the fact these people deserve them or not. I mean, I think like Jane Torval and Christopher Dean, I think we can all think that they absolutely deserve, in his case, a knighthood, in her case, a damehood, because they won Olympic medals. They brought so much pleasure to people over the course of the last, 40 years or so. So why not give them an honour? Quite happy with that. Idris Elba, he's been knighted. You could say he falls under the system. Well, he's still a really famous actor. Why not wait a bit? 0345 6060 9 73 is the number to call. As I say, the England captain and 2-time European champion Leah Williamson, she's made a CBE. Ella Toon, Kira Walsh, Alex Greenwood and Georgia Stanway, they're all given MBEs to recognise their contribution to the England triumph. And then in the world of entertainment, you've got Mira Sayal. She gets a damehood, an OBE for Warwick Davis, and sports broadcasters Clive Tilsley and Gabby Logan. So, I mean, if you want to comment on any of those, absolutely fine. But I'm more interested to know what kind of person do you think should get an honour in the honours list? And if we're creating an LBC honours list, your nominations, please. 0345 6060 973. Dr. Craig Prescott is a law lecturer and expert on the British Constitution at Royal Holloway University. He's writing a book on the future of the monarchy. Craig, very good morning. Why do we have an honours system and how did it originate?
Essentially, we have an honours system because we are a monarchy, ultimately, and it is the king who is the fount of all honour in this country. And, you know, it is derived from history. We can go back to Edward II and creating the Knights of the Garter, which still exist today. We can go back to sort of creating peerages. That's a different branch of the honour system to what we're talking about today. But it is the same principle that the king used to confer honours in order to gain favour from, you know, from people. And over the centuries, that's developed into a series of different orders and different honours. And in the modern world, it's morphed into recognition for service or good works or achievement. So it's something that